Free Talk Live. It's talk radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number you can call to join us. You can bring up whatever's on your mind. You can change the subject or comment on what we're talking about. If you have anything you'd like to tell about 150 radio stations nationwide, then you can call 603-283-6160. Freedom of speech is the name of the game here on Free Talk Live. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Lori.
And Riley.
And really good, interesting news. Well, first, I would like to... We do have some interesting Assange news, but first I would like to tell some people, I know a lot of people are waiting for my update about Ian. Ian got...
Your husband, by the way, in case in case listeners don't know who Ian is. Ian Freeman,
the founder of the show.
Yeah.
Ian Freeman is the founder of the show and my husband, and he called me yesterday and said he was getting taken to prison, but he didn't know any details because they don't have to tell you any details. They just leave you hanging on a lot of stuff on purpose, and... He did finally call me. It's the first time in, I was going to say first time in my life, but first time since I met him in 2020 that I didn't talk to him for over 24 hours. But
wow.
He said that they brought him to Stafford County Jail, so he's still not in prison. And they brought him to Stafford, whatever county jail, and he's waiting there for the prison bus to come pick him up. Who knows what day? They don't have to tell you. So we still don't know what prison he's going to. So right now, like, don't write to Ian or send him anything because he won't get it. But thank you for that. And yeah, I just want to update people because lots of people were asking me to update because I put like something dramatic on Twitter for one thing.
So for listeners who have never heard of why your husband went to prison, inform them briefly why he's in a cage.
Well, he was
captured
Bitcoin.
By the so-called government.
Well, yeah, he sold Bitcoin and the feds raided our house over it. No, they didn't knock on the door and hand him some paperwork over a paperwork
they brought
violation.
Machine guns in the tank, right?
Yeah, they claimed that he... sold Bitcoin without their permission, so
yeah, you know, a Bitcoin selling
Bitcoin
does not warrant a tank and flashbang grenades and broken glass and you walking around in broken glass, and yeah, it doesn't warrant that, obviously.
It doesn't, and that's just kind of the thing that the government does. I saw a video yesterday. I wish I knew which news organization. I should definitely bring this up, and I'll write that down. So FBI news. So I saw something yesterday, and on the break I'll bring it up and have the actual details of like where you can look at this, but it was something kind of what is his thing called? James O'Keefe style. I can't remember what the name of that. Project Veritas. It was
Project Veritas sounds familiar.
Project Veritas does undercover interviews with people, so they like got a Pfizer employee on a date, quote unquote, with a undercover journalist, and the journalist had a video of recording without the guy knowing, and he was able to put out this video with the guy saying stuff like, oh, we're trying to make the virus even worse so that way we have more vaccines to sell. Like,
shocker, Pfizer wanting to make a virus worse.
Yeah, there's like a specific name for that. Oh, man, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a certain type of research that is actually illegal to do. So he, you know...
Gain of function, maybe?
Yeah, gain of function research.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. All I'm trying to point out is that Project Veritas does these undercover things where they... Oh, I'm on a date with you. I'm just a normal person on a date with you. But really, they have a camera recording the people, which would definitely be illegal in New Hampshire. I'm always surprised that this is like... not illegal wherever these people are.
Well, there are some states that are single party states and some states that are two party states.
So New Hampshire is a two party consent state, meaning that both parties have to consent to being recorded.
Yeah, and single party means just one person does.
Hmm. So if you consent to the conversation being recorded, then you can do it in single party states.
In single party states, only one person needs to consent to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it should definitely be. I think that, I don't know, actually, wait, that's a little weird of a moral question. Maybe I shouldn't, like, be considering it on the air, because it's not important. What I wanted to say was, because I was going to say, do I think it's morally right to record without people, the person you're talking to, knowing? I guess it would be if...
I mean, if you're going to put out damning information about somebody, then maybe you might want to get their permission before recording something.
Yeah, but what if it infects the whole world like that? Like, and I'm not trying to be a utilitarian. I think I need more time to think about it.
That's a good question. I don't know. It's hard to say because it's not like you're committing an act of violence. You mm-hmm. are informing people.
Yeah, you're not harming. You're not stealing. You're not.
But at the same time, harm. You know, if the person is unaware that they're being recorded.
I think it depends on the setting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you expect some type of privacy, like if you're in your home and someone's recording you,
yeah,
that's one thing. But if you're like out in public on a date somewhere mm-hmm. and you're being recorded, then.
That is a good point. That changes things a lot. Like definitely if I had a camera in Riley's room, he rents from me next door, and I was like, see, he said this.
Yeah, that'd be
a little invasive.
Yeah.
That'd be a lot invasive.
But if you're out where you have no real. Like
if we're out
privacy.
doing social Sundays and I say some yeah. crazy stuff, then maybe you might want to bring it to the radio and
especially
say, really
if it affects the whole world.
Yeah.
But so I saw this video that some other news organization came out with, and I'll update you guys after the break when I pull that up. I just can't really, you know, search Twitter while I'm talking on the radio, but. They didn't.
Really, you can't multitask?
I'm not that great at multitasking. Like, doing first trade does kind of require it in a way, but
yeah.
I'm not, like, some kind of multitasking expert at all. But, so, some other news organization did an undercover interview with an ex-FBI agent, like one that wasn't just, you know, like, low-level either. And I don't know his name or anything. I can get that information. But he was saying, oh, really, the FBI can arrest anyone they want. And the person's like, oh, what do you mean? He's like, you just set them up. And then he like went into details about it. And he was saying, yeah, we did it all the time.
We've heard of this happening all the time here in New Hampshire, where the feds will try and set Ian or somebody up to yep. give him a deal. Oh, yeah. And
well, the cops do it. It doesn't yeah. even need to be the feds. I yeah. saw mm-hmm. a video today of there was a court case where a man was pulled over in his car. And they said he was drunk driving, but the cop's body cam footage caught her opening the bottle and dumping it out, like breaking the seal. There was a bottle, like full bottles, sealed bottles in his car.
Yeah.
And she broke the seal on the bottle and dumped it out on her body cam footage, and he still got found guilty.
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That it hopefully is getting appealed. That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
So Riley, he asked me who I was talking about when I was talking about Ian. And so we clarified who we're talking about. And then I just wanted to make that point about the FBI. Like you're saying, like all cops, like they are absolutely, they will do anything to put people in a cage to try to justify their paycheck.
Oh, come on, Bonnie. They just want to keep everybody in the neighborhood safe.
Yeah, that's why they stop people going 8 miles an hour over the speed
that's
limit.
Why they,
and
that's why
take
they broke into
them.
Your house with a tank and a bearcat and machine guns.
Yeah.
Tase you while you're having a seizure.
Yeah, they do stuff like that. Not to me, but they did do the other thing to me. But so I just wanted to explain what we were talking about. But in other
Before
US
we move on,
news,
I just want to mention that if listeners want to learn more about Ian's case, they can go to the crypto6.com. That's the crypto, crypto6.com.
Yes, thank you, Riley. So in other U.S. prosecution news, Joe Biden says, and that's the president of the United States.
Allegedly, the so-called president.
Yeah, says, well, he can be the president of that corporation. Like, yeah. Sure, he's that president. He's not mine.
Right, he's not my president either.
But, and none of them would be, no matter who he is, but... He says, Joe Biden says, Julian Assange prosecution may be thrown out, quote, considering dropping the charges.
Well, you have to remember, he's still a politician, and politicians are going to say stuff to, you know, sway people to their side or whatever, and they're never going to fulfill promises. So if Joe Biden does indeed pardon Julian Assange, I'll be thrilled and surprised.
If he does?
Yeah, he does.
I would be surprised as well. I was really not expecting Trump to do it, and then he didn't, even though there was all this talk about it. Like, oh, he may pardon Ross. He may pardon Assange. And who's the other ones?
Ross Ulbricht.
No, I already said Ross and Assange. There's the other one that he was going to drop the charges against. Was it Snowden, or is that too late?
I have no idea. I would love to think that Snowden could be pardoned and come back to the United States, but Edward Snowden might be a bad name among some people because he revealed the quote-unquote secrets of the government when he revealed their spy program.
Yep. The NSA stuff going on.
And it's always happening. I mean, people don't realize it, but your government is spying on you every single day.
Is Snowden the one that transitioned?
No.
No, that's Chelsea Manning.
Yeah, Chelsea Manning.
Oh, okay. And Chelsea Manning is not facing any charges right now either?
I don't think so.
Because I was thinking maybe that's the other one. No, I think it was Snowden. I think that people believed, for some reason, that Trump, at the end of his presidency, I almost said his pregnancy. At the end of Trump's presidency, there were rumors and like whispers that Trump may pardon Ross, Assange, and I think it was Snowden. But he didn't do that. He pardoned like Apatio or whatever, however you say that, some sheriff from Arizona that was literally racist and terrible.
Joe Arpaio?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible person.
Cruel human being, wanted to, you know.
Sadistic, seriously.
Yeah, really.
But let's get into this. Let's see. I don't know where he said this or any other details about it. I hope there are more details. And I also hope it's not just like a rumor, because this from express.co.uk makes it sound like it's an actual quote. So U.S. President Joe Biden says the U.S. is, quote, considering, unquote, dropping its prosecution against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. For years, Australia has called on the U.S. to drop its prosecution against Assange, an Australian citizen who has fought U.S. extradition efforts from prison in the U.K. This is a messed up website. It says, asked about the request on Wednesday as he hosted Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida for an official visit, Biden said, we're considering it. Okay. So that's an actual quote. Apparently really happened. That was just like a messed up paragraph. It ran two sentences into each other and it didn't make any sense.
Huh. Sounds like Joe Biden might be considering.
And he actually said that. It's not like, sources close to Joe Biden say that he said that. So Assange has been indicted on 17 espionage charges. He's never even set foot in the United States, and he's being charged with espionage against the United States and one charge of computer misuse. What?
That's a charge?
I had never heard that about him or anyone else.
Man, these terrorists love to just trump up charges on everything and everybody. I mean,
the United States terrorists?
Yeah, the United States gang of thugs likes to trump up terrorist charges on people just because they said some things they didn't like or posted some documents that they didn't like them posting.
So if you don't know what WikiLeaks is, that was his website where he posted classified documents. And at this point, this website points out that it was almost 15 years ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
American prosecutors allege that Assange, 52, encouraged and helped U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning steal diplomatic cables and military files that WikiLeaks published, putting lives at risk.
Oh, yeah. Whose lives?
I don't know.
Lives at risk constantly.
Yeah, these thugs put lives at risk constantly, like Lori said. They lock people in cages. They put people in cages for the mere act of possessing a plant. They'll put you in a cage or shoot your dog or shoot you if you...
Yeah, they pointed guns at me. That was putting my life at risk.
Yes, they're pointing guns at you.
Yeah.
Where did they bomb? Was it like Cleveland?
Wait, somewhere? The government?
It was a long time ago.
Kent State? That would have been Ohio.
Detroit?
In the one in Pennsylvania when they bombed that house of people that were like maybe like Black Panthers or something like that.
I don't know.
They've definitely...
Just bombing people. I mean, rolling tanks through the streets.
They do this stuff all the time, Lori. It's hard to keep every incident
right,
safe.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. That's why I'm like, where was it?
During the Civil War, Lincoln was bombing, like, just citizens in the cities, like Atlanta, just to try to get the, you know, the...
But that was an exceptional circumstance. The country was at war, Bonnie. You have to justify violence in certain situations, don't you?
They do no-knock raids on the wrong house, and then they're just like, whoopsie.
Yep.
Nothing ever comes of it. Like, your house is destroyed and you're traumatized forever, and maybe some of your family members are dead or you're dead, but we're not responsible.
At the very most, like, they'll dole out a little bit of money to someone that doesn't bring their, you know, family members back or anything, but...
Like, they can't even use Google Maps. Uber can do that, and the cops can't do it.
Well, we do have someone on the phone. Unscreened caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
It's your boy, the evolutionary capitalist bully, little skid here to pick on you preschool playground and
you're not a bully at all. You're just like a loser, like literally like a little faggot. I'm not even joking.
How come I've won every debate I've been on?
You haven't won anything. You never sound like you make any sense. And Mark proved that you're crazy.
He just said all he said is that where's your
he said, if you can't explain what you're talking about, and the only way that I would be able to understand what you're talking about is if I read your book, but you can't produce the book, then you're just like rambling like a crazy person. That's like basically the definition.
That's why I'm here. I'm here to explain it verbally. But
how about you write something down, then we can talk about it.
Let me demonstrate. Hey, Bonnie, why are you scared to do utilitarian analysis? Or are you scared to see how logical and superior it is to the non-aggression principle?
No, I didn't say I'm scared to do it. I said I'm not an utilitarian. So, okay, like anything else you have to actually say?
But it looked like you were so scared to even try to do utilitarian analysis because you're scared to see how superior it is to the non-aggression principle.
No, I'm not. And that doesn't even make sense. Like I just said, oh, well, I'm not a utilitarian, so I wouldn't say that. And then I moved on. You're just dumb, dude. You literally don't know what you're talking about. And if your whole argument is like, you looked scared. Okay, good for you. Like, you don't know what's going on in my head.
You're afraid to just to do the analysis and walk through how... like, maybe aggression might be...
This is why you're so dumb. Like, I don't go, like, I'm doing analysis now. I just think and process things and like, make conclusions on my own. I don't go around, like, I'm going to follow these exact steps and do it the, quote, utilitarian way. Like, my brain just works.
So how do you ANCAPs deal with standard utilitarian scenarios like the trolley car where you have to kill
I don't play the game. That's how I do it.
Exactly. I would either not play the game or if it was my like loved one, I would save my loved one and I wouldn't feel bad about it because why should I
kill people? So like you would steal a piece of paper to save the world.
That would literally be the definition of me not killing people. Like the train was out of control either way, and nobody was going to not... There was no situation where no one dies. That's, like, the whole point of the trolley problem. Maybe you don't understand that. And then if my husband was on one side and people I don't know on the other side, that makes the choice easy. If not, if I don't know any of these people, I don't care how many. I'm not going to play the game. I'm not going to touch it, like Riley said.
Okay, let me adjust the scenario.
No, this is really boring. Like seriously, like this is really boring. Like I just explained to you what I believe. I don't have any other.
This is not a radio show, dude. We don't have time to go through your problems.
It's just boring, dude. Like I don't care.
You scared to see the illogical?
I just explained to you like my exact thinking. And there's nothing else to discuss. Seriously, like literally nothing else to discuss. It's boring. I'm moving on. Unscreened caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, I am. Who are we speaking to?
Hey, how's it going, guys? This is Climber. I've called in a couple of times before. How are you? And I really don't follow the show that closely, but I happen to tune in once in a while. And I was curious just to get some background info on you guys because I live up here in New Hampshire. I've been associated with the freedom movement more as kind of an observer, bystander. I'm not really much of an activist, which makes me feel kind of like a freedom leech, but it's just a matter of time and resources. Mm-hmm. But if I understand correctly, Bonnie, you're from Texas?
Yeah, I'm from San Antonio.
And so how did you get involved in this movement? And, I know that you're married to Ian. I know you've been affiliated with the Keen group, but like what brought you here? And I have the same question for Lori and Riley as well.
Okay. So while I understood libertarian ethics and read a lot of stuff and listened to tons of Tom Woods videos in particular in 2016 and considered myself a libertarian, I went to a few libertarian meetups in Utah and I was like, oh, wow, this is pointless. Like, even though they were nice people, there was like five of them. And I was like, I felt just from that meeting like, oh, this is pointless because nothing like we can never like ever like win against the state, basically. And I was like, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to move to Texas since it's in my mind it was the freest state. I don't know why I thought that. Like, I thought, oh, everyone knows Texas is like the most freedom loving state. I don't really know why. I was 22. I moved back to Texas where I had mostly grown up, and I lived there for up until 2020. And 2020 ruined all of my life plans and locked me down just when I was moving to an apartment I really liked, and I was excited for my life there. And it literally just made every part of my life suck so bad. And what by 2020, I mean the lockdowns the governments did to stop people's lives from progressing during 2020. And they used the excuse of, oh, there's a pandemic, blah, blah, blah. So while that was happening, I thought, what are the libertarians saying about this? Like, I decided to revisit, like, I just looked up like Tom Woods and listened to some of his videos. And I just was kind of bored of it, and not because it's not a good show, but just because I wanted to know. I just was thirsty again for more libertarian talk. So I Googled like libertarian podcast. I found this one called We Are Libertarians, I believe. And I was listening to it, and the host mentioned, he said, oh, and the guys from Free Talk Live, they've actually convinced cops to quit their jobs and they're actually doing stuff up there. And I was like, whoa. So I looked up Free Talk Live. I listened to Free Talk Live for a bit, and a crazy series of events happened where I ended up being offered a job here without trying. I didn't apply for a job here. I didn't even think I would ever be able to come up here, but I listened to Free Talk Live for a while. Somebody offered me a job in New Hampshire from me being in New Hampshire, not looking for a job or anything, just doing Uber Eats. I came up here and knocked on doors for candidates for Young Americans for Liberty. And while I was here, I was like, all right, I'm going to meet Ian and see if he likes me. And I met Ian and we fell in love. And Ian is the founder of Free Talk Live. And let's keep you on the line if you don't mind, Climber. 603-283-6160 if anyone else would like to join the conversation. We're going to get to Lori and Riley's answers about that coming up. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. Don't go anywhere.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. In addition to being one of the world's first cryptocurrencies, Dash was the first crypto project to have a decentralized autonomous organization that to this day continues to improve and promote Dash. Every month, 10% of the mining rewards go into a treasury. Anyone with one Dash to spend can put forward a proposal to the Dash masternodes. The masternodes vet the proposals and decide which ones move forward and are funded by that treasury. Nowadays, DAOs are plentiful, but Dash paved the way by doing it first, nearly a decade ago. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Talk Live, it's talk radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. We have Climber on the line waiting to continue our conversation here, but you can call in and bring up whatever is on your mind, 603-283-6160, and Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash with BitRefill.com, where you can buy gift cards from big retailers, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Lori.
Riley.
And Climber, you were on the line, and what was it that you were asking us, just to repeat it for the listeners?
Yeah, well, I was just kind of looking for some background on the three of you. As somebody that has gone to different states and experienced the local freedom movements in Utah and Texas, for example, I know you grew up in Texas, but how would you describe New Hampshire as an environment? I mean, obviously, moving to Keene, it's a college town. It's a pretty cool place, and you obviously fell in with a good group of people there, even though, the raid and everything with Ian and Co. happened like not long after you showed up, really. I mean, I don't know what month you showed up in 2020, but so if you could just maybe give a comparison of like Utah and New Hampshire versus like Texas and New Hampshire, Texas and Utah, and what you like about New Hampshire, and do you think this is going to be your home now?
Yeah, I definitely think that New Hampshire will be my home now, and the reason is all about the people. Like, I think the most beautiful place that I've ever lived, and the most beautiful place in America is Utah. I love the weather. I love it so much, but I absolutely couldn't stay there. Like, the small town I lived in, I wouldn't be able to live there anyway because it was a federal military base, and I have no, like, you have to have business to live there.
And you have no love for the feds.
No way. But also, even so, what I was going to say was the small town I lived in Utah, the cops hated me and purposely went after me multiple times. Like, I had so many petty, they only arrested me once, but like charges for nothing, and they would like bother me and they were like threatening
Were
to.
you doing activism there?
I only did activism there once, but I think it inflamed them and bothered them. So, like, I got arrested for no reason, and it was so dumb, and they were trying to charge me with a DUI, and I'm not going to rehash the whole thing, but they're trying to charge me with a DUI when I wasn't even driving. I was at work, and they came there. They got me to admit to things because I didn't know that any of my rights. I didn't know that I shouldn't talk to cops at all because they were investigating me. I just thought they're trying to get to the bottom of something. Then I get charged with a DUI. I ultimately didn't get that DUI because like I wasn't drinking, but after that, I started like looking up like how to talk to cops. Like, what did I not know that I need to know? And I found all these stories about like cops killing people. And I found Cop Block, which is kind of funny because like I followed Cop Block on Facebook, which was a group of people from Keene, actually, who, I mean, it started in Keene, I'm pretty sure, like 99%
I think
sure.
it started in Keene too, the Cop Block thing.
Yeah, it was Adamo Freeman and Pete Ayer, right?
Yep.
And so those two started Cop Block, which would be like they would see somebody getting pulled over, and they would go there to film the cops, like make
which
sure
is your
cops...
right, by the way. You are you are allowed by law to film the police,
yep.
no matter what they tell you. You have every right to film.
Even though they might not know.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, and they'll lie to you anyway.
Yeah, they are allowed to lie. Even though it's not moral. So I actually followed Cop Block on Facebook even back in 2016, but it didn't lead me to finding like Free Talk Live and all that stuff or the Free State Project. And my whole point was like I loved, if I was just basing like where I wanted to live on the look and the weather, I would have to choose Utah, but I cannot do that. Like, I don't like the weather in New Hampshire at all, but I absolutely don't want to live anywhere else just due to the people. Like, it is such a game changer, a pro-life hack to have people around you who are moral in your opinion. Like, if you can't all agree about is violence okay or not, like, that is a huge difference, and more people should consider that. Like, do your friends, if the cops came to your friends and asked them to lie about you to put you in jail, would they do it? Because like, you need to consider that when considering your friends. I know that none of my friends in New Hampshire would do that. I know that they already know the basics about whether or not, like what's right and what's wrong. Like, is violence okay? And then considering what actually is violence, like is taxation theft and stuff like that. That's absolutely...
Oh, was it the show? Was it Ian and Captain and other people that you heard on the Free Talk Live show? That message resonated with you, and as somebody that was already leaning towards kind of idealistic, freedom oriented pursuits, that kind of triggered your that was the impetus behind your move here, do you think?
Oh yeah, whenever I found Free Talk Live, I was like, absolutely, I need to get there somehow. I really want to live in a place where people actually care about the stuff I care about, because when I moved to Texas, I didn't continue being like Like I, it didn't, it wasn't like a front and center of my mind, like being a libertarian all the time. I was just like, well, I'm just going to go live in the place that's already the freest in my mind. For some reason, I thought that was Texas, and just live like a normal life. And like, if some political conversation would come up around my friends, I just like wouldn't say anything, 'cause I was like, they won't get where I'm coming from. I'm not starting this conversation. I'm not going to make people not like me just because like I believe that we should have the right to have guns or something like that. And it's just like, that's a terrible way to live. Like, you know, like putting yourself in a little box, and like even like boyfriends, like I would have a boyfriend and he'd say something like, you know, there really should be a $15 minimum wage, like trying to sound smart and cool. And I'd be like, yeah,
like, sure.
Well, right. Most people are uninformed. I mean, especially politically, I don't care whether they're on the right or the left. Most people,
right.
They have a very limited worldview because most of their information is coming from, you know, public education and mainstream media.
Joe
and they,
Rogan.
They don't really step outside of their comfort.
No, Joe Rogan's an intelligent guy.
But there are there's just an archetype of guys who do nothing but repeat Joe Rogan because they think he's smart and they can't actually think for themselves.
Yeah, that is a problem for sure.
But it's not just Joe Rogan. It's like Clymer said, like just like, you know, the mass media that is fed to people.
The average person doesn't really think about things like what would happen if the government set an arbitrary minimum wage, like $15. Yeah. They don't realize that a lot of products would be more expensive and a lot of things would be less valuable. Yeah,
it's a knee-jerk solution that ultimately creates more problems that, you know, unless you're fully informed, you're not
sure.
Even going to consider.
Well, they're so intellectually lazy.
Yep.
Like they don't
Riley,
want to do that.
Are you from New Hampshire originally? Or
I actually, so
state project?
I was born and raised in Utah. I grew up in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, otherwise known as the Mormon Church, and you know they emphasize a lot of liberty mindedness there sometimes. But I grew up in Mormonism. I have since walked away from the church, and I found Free Talk Live in 2014, 2015 on a local radio station in St. George, Utah, and started listening from there. And in 2016, May of 2016, I started doing the Free Talk Live Daily Digest, which is, you know, it started out being 20 to 30 minutes of the best audio highlights I thought were the best highlights of the show. And then that morphed into an hour long thing over time. And so if you want to find the Free Talk Live Digest, you can go to feeds.freetalklive.com and search for the Daily Digest there.
Or SoundCloud and then search Free Talk Live.
Yeah, you can do that too. And I found the Free State Project because of Free Talk Live, and the message of liberty really resonated with me because in 2014, when the Bundy family was having their issues with the grazing rights over cattle.
In Nevada, right?
In Nevada, my friends and I went go down to protest the fact we didn't protest the fact the feds were interfering with Clive and Bundy. We were protesting the fact that there was a quote-unquote free speech zone. On American soil. Can you believe that the so-called government has to have a free speech zone on American soil? So that got us all riled up. And from there, I learned about anarcho-capitalism. I wouldn't consider myself an anarcho-capitalist today. I would consider myself more of a voluntarist. I believe all human actions should be voluntary and consensual. So I moved to New Hampshire. I actually came to visit a couple times, two or three times before moving here. My first visit was in 2018, in August of 2018. I was on the show a couple times, and I loved being in New Hampshire. And I moved here last year in July of 2023, and I don't know where I'm going to end up. Right now, I'm enjoying living in New Hampshire, living out this part of my life and this chapter of my life.
Now, are you living in Keene or close by to Keene?
I'm actually living in Keene right now.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. And was that transition hard? Was it difficult to find, you know, like housing? I don't know if you're working at all. Obviously, you know, you have a disability, but you seem to have a very high level of independence regardless, especially if you're moving to a new state with new people.
I mean, some things are harder about it. Like Keene, New Hampshire is a very small town. And so transportation, there's really no quote unquote public transportation. I'm a libertarian. I'm not sure how I feel about public transportation. But, I mean, it's useful for someone who has a disability, but I don't like stealing money from my neighbors to fund it. But, you know, some things are harder to do. But I have found that a lot of people around here are really helpful. I just have to be willing to ask for help. So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, congratulations and welcome to New Hampshire.
Thank you.
Now, Lori, are you from New Hampshire originally or this part of the world? Or
I'm from Massachusetts originally.
Oh, me as well.
I grew up in Clinton.
Okay. I grew up in Acton.
Okay.
And before I moved here, I was living in Townsend.
Yeah, so Clinton's like a little 5-mile town, kind of towny dystopia.
Lots of bars in Clinton.
Yeah, lots of bars, and no one's going anywhere with their life. And so my whole life fell apart when I was 25, and I was like, why am I here? My mom died, and a 13-year relationship with an abusive ex ended, finally. And just everything, my whole life just exploded, and I was like, you know what? I'm out of here. So I packed a backpack and got on a Greyhound bus and started traveling around the country for like 7 years. And then I met my husband in Utah. He's ex-Mormon also. And we stayed there for a while. And then I got pregnant. And I didn't want to raise my daughter. I didn't want to raise her or any children in Utah because it's kind of passive-aggressive. And
it definitely can be.
Yeah. And the Mormonism rules the government there.
Yeah.
And the air quality is terrible and it's too hot. And I just don't like Utah. so I was like, let's get out of here. So we bought an RV and we went RVing in Arizona, living in the desert with a 6-month old. And I got a job out there and we saved a bunch of money. And then I had my second daughter living in Arizona, and we had lived there for a year, and I really, really didn't like it. And I said, can we please go back to New England? He had never been. Oh, I brought him here to Boston for vacation for like 4 days once. But he had never been to like this part of the country. And so we came. The agreement was for a year each place because I stayed in Arizona for a year, which I did not like at all.
Yeah, it's way hotter there than even Utah.
And it's weird. It's kind of bizarre. We lived in Tombstone, and it was a really weird place.
I've never been there, but every experience I've ever had with Utah or Arizona, I meant to say, is weird.
Yeah, well, first we boondocked, and that was cool. We boondocked in the...
what is that?
Where you just like dry camp with no campground and no... Like we just did it in the middle of the desert on... Mm-hmm. On BLM land.
Oh.
And there was like wild horses in our campsite. And like, it was really cool. But it was hard because it was an hour drive to the nearest grocery store and stuff like that. So
do you have any family left in Clinton or do you have any family in Mass still?
No, my dad is in New Hampshire. My sister lives in Washington and that's really all the family I have.
How about your husband? Does he still have family in Utah?
Yes. Yeah. His whole family's still in Utah. They're all LDS. Yeah, sure.
That's interesting that Utah is the commonality between
I know. That's really fascinating. And here we are sitting in this room together.
I've thought about it before, but us three have actually never done the show together all at once. So it's kind of funny.
But Free Talk Live just happened because I was kind of born anti-authoritarian. I don't want anyone to rule over me my whole life. I don't do well with it. I just want everyone to leave me alone, and I want to leave them alone and just be peaceful and exist. And
I think it takes a high degree of independence and like a kind of a leaning towards self-sufficiency and to be libertarian minded. I mean, because let's face it, most people are interested in, you know, kind of government as a security, you know, some means by which they can be taken care of.
Yeah. I call them daddy government.
But interesting. That interview you did with Silver Dave, Bonnie, was interesting. I put a couple of comments on YouTube trailing yours.
His video where he was calling Bitcoin a trap. You put comments on there?
Yeah,
nice.
I think he means well. I think he has a healthy distrust of systems in general, which, I guess where you got to kind of be. I have the advantage of having worked in IT for, 20 years, and I happen to work in network security specifically. So I had some background with, hashing algorithms and public key infrastructure. So I understand enough so as to where I can, say with a higher degree of confidence than most people that it's a pretty safe protocol.
Nice.
But that was a good interview, and that was a good video you did, Riley, where you were buying gold coins.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun video.
Oh, yeah? Where can they see it?
It's on YouTube. They can search for Blind Silver Experience.
Silver Dave's channel, Local Silverman.
Local Silverman, yep.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you, Clymer? How did you find out about the Free State Project?
So, like Lori, I grew up in Mass. I grew up in Acton, Mass. You know, like all of you, I've always been kind of freedom-minded. You know, just personal autonomy, personal responsibility over yourself. Now, I wouldn't consider myself so much of a voluntarist or, an anarcho-capitalist as I am kind of a limited constitutionalist. That's kind of where I fall still. I realize that, you know, the Constitution has not failed us so much, but it hasn't really been respected. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to make a long story short, I was, you know, like a lot of people, when you get online, you start, you know, kind of looking for information that resonates with you. And the Free State Project, I came across very early on. And as a matter of fact, I've been, you know, making monthly donations, automated ones to the Free State Project for, you know, probably at least 15 years now. So I've been affiliated with it for quite a while. You know, there's the freedom movement in New Hampshire and the libertarian movement associated with the Free State Project is pretty diverse. I mean, you get people from all sorts of different areas, and it creates a very, you know, kind of diversified and pluralistic population here. And a lot of us, I think, are pretty atomized. We're pretty, you know, kind of split apart in a lot of ways, because nobody tends to, you know, voice their disagreements like libertarians do, you know. So but it's a strong community. It's a good community. So I bought some land here in Stoddard back in, I guess it was 2012, 2013. In a previous life, I was in construction for a long time. So, you know, I just bought a lot, saved up $5,000. I put in the foundation, save up, you know, another $8,000, buy the framing stock, you know. And then using vacation time twice a year, every year over the course of about 5-6 years, I just built a house. And my wife and I moved here during COVID. I mean, we were working from home anyway. And once COVID hit, it really didn't make much sense to, I was looking for an excuse to get out of Mass anyway. So, moved up here. I've been here for a few years now, and it's great. New Hampshire's great. I've been to a couple of the crypto meetups. I've met, you know, Chris Wade. And, back when, you know, Fokine Great was still open.
Yeah.
It's a restaurant that we miss.
Yeah.
Sure.
I was going to ask you if you had, do you keep in touch with, do you daily interact with like libertarians here, or do you mostly just keep to yourself?
Well, you know, I mostly, just because I work and, you know, I'm an older guy, really not much of an activist. Like I said, I feel like a bit of a freedom leech in that regard, but
funny way to put it, but
I do.
It's not the truth.
Yeah, I do try to donate where I can to people, but you know, I got to tell you, man, that FBI raid for selling Bitcoin. Now, granted, I know there was some circumstances there associated, but I did follow the trial pretty closely. You know, I think, you know, if I was Ian at the time, I probably wouldn't have been, you know, regardless, I'm not going to say, you know, everybody could say coulda, woulda, shoulda after the fact, but, you know, 50 plus agents and Bearcats and the money that went into that investigation. I got to tell you, nothing scares me more than state power after seeing that. It's frightening.
It is pretty alarming what the American public will put up with in the name of fighting crime.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look at the way that whole thing was portrayed, you know, in the media, if you look at the press releases put out by, you know, the special agents involved with the investigation post conviction, and I mean, it's very biased, and most people only see that information; they don't delve into it. Most people are, they see that whole thing and they just think Bitcoin bad, you know. They just have no clue, and it's unfortunate. But I'm hopeful that, you know, as time goes on, more people will. I mean, obviously Bitcoin is becoming more mainstream now because the banks, the biggest banks, are, you know, creating ETFs surrounding it, which is, you know, basically instigating broad stream adoption with this. I mean, these are the fastest growing ETFs on Fidelity right now. So,
wow.
I don't see how you really can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. So I think, you know, Bitcoin is going to become, you know, more mainstream. You know, the other altcoins are going to follow suit. You know, it's only a matter of time before, you know, I think Ethereum and other altcoins end up with their own ETFs on the exchanges, or on the, you know, the Fidelities and the BlackRocks and so forth. So,
yeah, I don't know for sure.
I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be associated with, you know, the freedom movement here. And I think the general community there in Keene has been pretty great. I mean, obviously, you guys all have a good working relationship with each other on the show. And it's good to hear, Bonnie, that you like New Hampshire, particularly for the people. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're here too. And I also don't think everyone needs to be the same kind of activist. Like, somebody was specifically saying recently, like, if you can't do, like, one thing people can sometimes do is donate financially. And it sounds like you do that. And, it seems like you're probably a busy person, and that's the thing, like, productive people are, that's kind of like the point of believing in freedom, is wanting to be left alone to be productive and enjoy your life. That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
I don't think people should be, like, stopping others from doing activism though. And it doesn't sound like Clymer is that type of person. I can't stand the type of people that are like, I don't want to do activism, so you shouldn't, because you're making us all look bad. Like, that's just ridiculous.
Well, activism is one of these things that's really hard to do because it's going to take time away from your job. You might get locked in a cage,
mm-hmm.
you know, things like that.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Clymer. That made a very interesting conversation. I wonder if Skeeter is still listening. The thing about Skeeter is, like, your calls don't get a whole almost hour of attention because you should face the same consequences as you would in real life if you walked up and started a boring conversation with someone. Like, they're not going to want to talk to you. That's just the way that that life goes. And Clymer, I really appreciate your call. He had, you know, an interesting subject to bring up.
Yeah, and it was good to find out about our history and things like that.
Yeah, and also our callers, a lot of them don't tell us much about themselves. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. Don't go anywhere. That's 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live.
Hi, I'm Derek J. I don't want a politician to represent me. To me, government is the idea that one group of people can coerce everyone to comply with an edict or face increasing punishments up to and including death. Despite perhaps the most noble of intentions, the best government services are a far cry from what could be provided for by voluntary interactions. Besides, the people who call themselves the government wage wars and put peaceful people in jail for crimes involving no victims. If Starbucks used some of its money to drop bombs, I wouldn't shop there. So why would I support the American Empire? The Empire does not require my consent.
Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. You can order your copy of the Director's Cut DVD now at victimlesscrimespree.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. Welcome to Free Talk Live. 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. 6160. You can bring up whatever is on your mind, start a whole new conversation, or comment on what we're talking about. It doesn't matter because it's Free Talk Live, and you have the freedom to bring up whatever you want here. Free Talk Live is brought to you by LibertyMinded.com. Official Free Talk Live gear, like t-shirts and hoodies, are available at LibertyMinded.com. Plus, you'll find a unique collection of cool and liberty-oriented clothing at LibertyMinded.com. That's LibertyMinded.com. And with you on the show tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Lori.
Riley.
And Lori, you brought in a story tonight that was really shocking to me. Apparently, New Jersey is getting, is it the state that's getting sued or a hospital? Yeah.
The state is getting sued.
Over keeping newborn blood. What is that all about?
So this is from IJ.org. New Jersey parents file federal class action lawsuit challenging state's secret retention of newborn blood for 23 years. The state can currently use the DNA from the blood samples for any reason without informed consent from parents.
Any reason?
Why did they want to hold on to the blood this long?
Well, I mean, you're getting a DNA database of every single person that's been born. You don't have to wait for them to commit a crime to get their DNA or to submit it willfully to one of these DNA checking websites. You just have it already the moment they're born.
That's, and when you say any purpose at all,
yeah,
that's definitely something they were probably doing, like creating a database.
Or framing people.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that's so creepy.
Today, a new group of New Jersey parents teamed up with the Institute for Justice to file a federal lawsuit challenging New Jersey's practice of keeping blood samples taken from newborn babies for 23 years, all without parents' knowledge or consent. Not only does New Jersey hold on to the blood, it can use the blood samples in any manner it chooses. When babies are born in New Jersey, state law requires that the blood be taken from the newborns and tested for diseases such as cystic fibrosis, hormonal deficiencies, and other immunity issues. All states perform similar tests, and it's true. They won't let you skip it. My oldest daughter was not born in a hospital. She was born in a birthing center with no doctor. I had a midwife and stuff, just me, my husband, and the midwife.
Mm-hmm.
And she still had to take blood.
Wow.
She didn't take like a vial of blood. She did the heel prick. They check, I think, for lead or something. I'm not even sure what they check for.
I can't believe that if you're just saying no thanks, you can't. What?
Nope. It's against the law. Wow. So they.
That's crazy. Like, why would?
I don't need the test. Thank you anyway.
Yeah.
Yep. Why?
I tried. Wow. I tried to say no, and the midwife was like, "I have to by law do this, or I will get, you know, my license pulled and." Yeah.
It's so annoying.
Yep. But after the testing is over, New Jersey's Department of Health keeps the leftover blood for 23 years. The state does not ask parents for their consent to keep the baby's blood, failing to even inform parents that will hold on to the residual blood.
Wow.
The only way parents could learn about such retention is by proactively looking it up on one of the third-party websites listed on the bottom of the card they're given after the blood draw. And once the state has the blood, it can use it however it wishes, including selling it to third parties, giving it to the police without a warrant, or even selling it to the Pentagon to create a registry, as previously happened in Texas.
Oh, wow. That's insane.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the national government could, in effect, have a national database of everyone's blood.
Mm-hmm. I know that they do stuff like this because I referenced in the last segment that I got arrested for driving under the influence while I was at work, and I had been at work for over an hour, and the cops came and accused me of drinking and driving to work, and I accidentally admitted that I did drive to work, even though I was not drunk, and I blew into their little thing, and it said zero. I'm not going to rehash the whole story, but so I had like a ridiculous pullover arrest for that. I ended up getting something called a plea and abeyance, where they just say that, like, we won't charge you with it. We won't charge you with anything if you don't get in trouble for 6 months. So that's what happened. But so a ridiculous, stupid little nothing burger arrest. And then a week after that happened, and this was military, they're not military police, but they're not regular cops. It was on a military base, but it's not a regular military base. So I don't remember what they are. There's like a specific, really stupid word for what they are. It's not MPs, not military police. But anyways, they called me a week later. Actually, they went to my parents' house and knocked on the door. I didn't even live there. And informed them to tell me to go to the police station a week after the whole arrest. And I was already, like, I wasn't in jail or anything. And it was because they said, oh, during the arrest, we forgot to take a DNA sample from her mouth, and we need to do that. And I didn't know that I could just tell the cops no back then. So I went and drove to the police station and was like, I'm here for the DNA sample. They swabbed a swab in my mouth and they're like, thank you. Like, put it in a plastic bag. I don't. Well, why would they do that?
So they have your DNA.
Exactly.
So they want to make sure they have a database of everyone's DNA. So if a crime's committed.
And those were federal employees. So it's not shocking to me at all that they just like having people's DNA to look at and hold on to.
Well, they use it now for, they buy the DNA from these 23andMe sites now too, to solve crimes.
It's not surprising.
And the thing is about it is that none of that stuff is as 100% as people think. People think they found the DNA at the site. So, it must be true. Those things are always wrong. Coming up incorrectly. When I blew in the little blood alcohol test thing and it said 0% and they still said that I was drunk. It's just wrong. It's just those things are never 100% and they'll still use that as evidence against you in a trial and put people have gone to jail for life or even gotten the death penalty. And it was all because of this DNA science that is not very good science. So.
Well, yeah. And you have to trust that it was collected properly, it was stored properly, that the chain of
that it wasn't planted.
What is it called? The chain of exchange or whatever
chain
it's called.
Chain of custody.
Chain of custody was properly followed the whole way through.
Yeah. And on top of that, it's just they didn't know how to do that stuff until the 70s. So it's not something you can really trust because scientists end up learning new things all the time. I just don't trust that.
I don't even think that they could do DNA in the 70s. It was the 90s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know why I thought it was the 70s. Well, wasn't the 70s when DNA was, I don't know if this is going to be wrong, but I thought that was when it was found out about at all.
Oh, maybe that. But they weren't using it in court until much later.
Even more recent than that. We do have a caller on the line, so we'll come back to this article. But unscreened caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Now I need some relationship advice. I'm morbidly obese, like Richie Rich, and I've got a micro wiener. Captain, how can I have sex with a cougar such as yourself, Bonnie?
A what such as myself? What? A young person hung up. Oh, my God.
That sounded like Colin.
He kind of did when he makes my voice. Yeah, I don't have any relationship advice. Sounds like you're pretty hopeless. I just don't even know what to say to that. Actually, I would like to point out that I do offer relationship advice because I have the best husband on the planet.
Wait, so your husband's in a cage. How can he be the best?
Well, he's the best. It's not his fault he's in a cage. So because I have the best husband on the planet, that qualifies me to give relationship advice.
All right.
So anybody that calls in asking for relationship advice, actually anybody here, we all have significant others.
We do.
And I'm sure you guys think that yours are the best, but it's actually mine.
Alana's the best.
Stu's also the best.
So actually, yeah. I think that qualifies all of us. So if anybody would
if
like
it's
to
not
call
easy,
in,
it's probably not right. That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's so true. That's so true. I was telling someone today that I was like, well, the first time we ever went on a date was this date, but the first time we met was October 10th, 2020. So that's
I don't know
what,
any of that.
Really?
Yeah. I don't even know how long we've been married. I have to ask him.
We consider that our anniversary because we just were in love right when we met. Yeah. So, and it's just it was so obvious to both of us. It's
that's why I don't know. Because I never plan on being we were married for 15 years or whatever. So I don't need to know.
It's
just forever.
Together.
From now. Yeah. From whenever it started to forever.
I am just a dates person.
I guess I am too. I like dates. I keep a journal and things like that. So.
I need to get on that keeping a journal thing.
I don't know what day it is most of the time.
Yeah.
You just know you're supposed to be here a certain day, right?
That's right.
I never knew what day it was when I had Ian here. But now that I have to know what day it is, I kind of have to. Or else things will suddenly sneak up on me.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what day it is. But yeah, when Ian lived here, he did all that thinking for me. I just wanted to point out that I do relationship advice. So that's what the joke was from whoever that was. That
it was called.
It was Colin.
I'm pretty sure it was Colin.
Well, probably, it does sound like his Bonnie voice that he makes for me. So this New Jersey baby blood. This is from the Institute for Justice too, right? So they're suing. They're suing New Jersey. They're a really great organization. They will usually for free. They'll take people's cases where they need to sue someone, and they'll represent them for free. So
that's great.
It's almost always things that we would agree with here on the show, like suing cops because they did something wrong to a person, and normally, oh, you can't get the money. You can't get the money to hire a lawyer to do that yourself. So like the cop would never face any repercussions because, like, of course their boss isn't going to do anything to them for,
investigated themselves.
Yeah. Yep. They'll investigate themselves, find that they did nothing wrong, and then the cop will get off scot-free. But the Institute for Justice will often take up cases like that and sue people for them on their behalf. So they're right now suing New Jersey, the state, for holding on to baby's blood for 23 years. I guess at some point it's not a baby blood anymore.
I mean, it was at one point. Yeah. So it says, parents have the right to informed consent if the state wants to keep their children's blood for decades and use it for purposes other than screening for diseases, said IJ senior attorney Rob Frommer. New Jersey's policy of storing baby blood and DNA and using that genetic information however it wants is a clear violation of the Fourth Amendment rights of all New Jersey parents and their newborns. The plaintiffs challenging this law are two Boonton parents, Erica and Jeremiah Jedniak, and Reverend Hannah Lavaglio. I don't know if I said their names wrong. A cranberry
Those
mother
look like
of two.
Hard or sound like hard names.
Yeah. It's not right that the state can enter an incredibly intimate moment, the tender days of childbirth, and take something from our children, which is then held onto for 23 years, said Hannah. The lack of consent and transparency causes me to question the intent and makes me worried for my children's future selves. As a mother, I deserve the right to decide whether or not the government takes blood from my son and holds onto it for decades past its claimed use. So I don't like the as a mother statements.
Mm-hmm.
As a
human
guardian of another human being's life, you should not do anything that they can or cannot consent to, like that would be possibly detrimental to them.
Yeah, I even thought it was nice that the article specifically points out that it is breaching the rights of the parents and the newborn.
Yeah, the newborns. Like, you shouldn't pierce their ears. Hmm. You shouldn't give up their DNA. You shouldn't give their fingerprints to the cops. None of that stuff.
Hmm. I hadn't really thought about the ear piercing thing like that, honestly, because it's just like something people just do. I never really thought about it. I know that when I was in fourth grade, I begged my mom to pierce my ears. So I feel like you could totally consent at that point.
Yeah, I was 2 weeks old. My parents got my ears pierced.
Hmm.
Wow.
Cannot consent.
Because like if they do it ugly, like they make it uneven, like you might be like, wow, and this just stuck in my ears for life.
Or if you just don't want it.
Yeah.
You'll always have a scar there.
Mm-hmm.
I think my parents let my sisters get their ears pierced at 12.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Also, circumcision. Don't do it.
Yeah,
just don't alter people's lives in any way if you are a steward for them.
I definitely would not do that. I would leave it up to my kids if I was going to have kids. But I also think that there are some calls that you have to make that, you know, people will grow up and disagree with. And I don't think they should be able to, like, sue their parents. But
no.
If the state's doing it to them, they should be able to sue the state.
But nobody has to get their ears pierced or get circumcised or have their fingerprints or DNA given away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stuff like that. Serious medical things where it's like an emergency. You have to decide on something is different because you're trying to prevent detriment to their life.
Mm-hmm.
But these are things that are not useful to the person in the future.
What do you think about this? I'm derailing the conversation a bit here. But I said to Nikki and Colin on, I think, last Wednesdays, I was like, I've been kind of toying with the idea. It's very emotionally charged. And I just, I honestly assume you guys are going to immediately disagree with me. But I don't know. I think I make a pretty good point that children are the property of their parents until they're able to say otherwise.
I disagree that they're property.
Mm-hmm. I would actually agree with Lori. I look at it more like a stewardship.
Yeah.
Like these sovereign individuals are coming into your care.
But are they sovereign? How can they be sovereign at newborn age. You can't be.
I still say they're sovereign individuals. They're just put under your stewardship until they've learned what sovereignty means.
You're assuming that you're just kind of talking about them like, oh, well, one day they'll be sovereign, but in reality they're not when they're a newborn blob.
I don't think they're property, but I think you are their guardian.
Okay.
You need to guide them through life.
You need to guide them on how to interact with society.
Then why is it such a big deal when some other adult comes up and says, actually, I want to be their steward. Give them to me. It only makes sense that they're your property. Because like, if somebody else just claims, actually, Lori, like, I need to be the steward of this little girl, like, them's are fighting words, and I'm going to come up and take them because I just decided that, like, why is that wrong? I think it's because the children belong to you.
Well, I think the universe chose those children to belong to the person that they were given to.
But then, like, there are people that will be like, oh, well, that person, that parent is beating their kids. They should rightfully take the kid, you know? Mm. So, like, did the universe mess up in those cases? I don't know. It's very emotionally charged.
It's a hard topic. Like, I
disagreed, like, 2 weeks ago until I just, like, for some reason got on this thought train and was thinking about it. I just believe in property rights. And the other thing that really convinced me, when I think of myself at 5 years old, and this is the thing, if you guys had bad parents, you might think otherwise, but when I think of myself at even like 5 years old, I remember that clearly. I remember my fifth birthday. I remember what I was like. I remember interactions with my siblings. Well, it doesn't bother me to think of myself as the property of my parents at that time.
See, the problem I have with property is you can do with your property whatever you want. You can destroy it.
That's a good
if
point.
If you want to.
But, you know, destroying another human's life.
Yeah, it's different.
It's different.
Well,
so,
that is a very good
point.
Let
me ask you this, Bonnie. Do you believe that coconut is your property?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
Okay.
I believe coconut's your property, too.
And I made that point when we had this conversation. I think it was last week.
It was 2 weeks ago, probably.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, I made that point last time. I was like, I definitely think coconut's my property, but I'm not saying that's the same thing as people's kids. It's
right,
different.
I don't view a human and an animal as the same.
I don't at all either. I don't think that.
I don't value their lives the same.
Yeah. I don't think they
because
have
I don't eat people.
Human rights, so. Yeah.
I don't eat people either.
I don't eat dogs either, but yeah. I think that you can clearly articulate the difference between humans and animals. And that's why I just like, I can't buy the whole, it's morally wrong to eat animals because they have rights. They don't have the same rights as humans.
I don't eat dogs either, but I am not like, I don't think that it would be morally objectable more so than eating a pig for a person to raise a dog humanely to be eaten.
Yeah, I don't think it would be morally objectable.
I don't want to, but like,
I think it would make me think they were weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I wouldn't think they would taste good anyway.
I mean, in starvation situation, you're going to eat something.
Yeah.
But the actual like reason I think that it would make them weird is not just because of like the taste of the meat or because humans just don't do that. It's because you can detect a different level of consciousness between dogs and cows. I'm sorry.
Pigs are really smart.
They're smart. And I've heard that even cows are smart, but they're just not the same. Like they're not going to be. Coconut literally loves me, thinks that he's a human. Like, a cow's not going to do that, I don't think. But then again, I do realize that I wasn't raised around cows and pigs, and, like, maybe I just don't know. But
no, dogs are different, though. Mm-hmm. They're the only animal other than people that understand pointing. When you point at something, dogs are the only other animal that understand that.
Yeah. I didn't know they were the only ones, but I've always, I've learned so much about dogs since I got Coconut, because I didn't grow up with, like, dogs.
Monkeys might, too.
Oh, really?
But I don't know.
So
I know dogs do.
I will point to something like in the other side of the room and Coconut looks that way and it's always so like, wow, you're so smart. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, but it's because they've been raised with humans for so long and they've become kind of
they've evolved
intertwined
to function with us a little bit.
Intertwined into human behavior.
Yeah.
So if you point at something at a wolf, it's not going to look.
Right, exactly. Or even like a cat. And that's what's so crazy to me is like...
Cats are not domesticated.
I'm watching Aria's cats for her while she's in jail. And I grew up with cats, but I also didn't have any for like 5 years as an adult. Or I don't know how long I've been an adult, like 8 years or something. And it is always shocking to me. It's shocking to me to realize again how different cats and dogs are. Like they don't seem to care about me at all. They just want something from me and then they want to go off and do their own thing. like Coconut would go crazy if he was alone, like he does every time he's alone.
The difference with cats and dogs is dogs were domesticated by people and cats kind of just saw that they could get food out of us.
I think that's so true. That's
and so they just kind of hang around and get food.
That's why my girlfriend has a few cats.
Oh, she does? You also said she's part cat.
Yeah, she's definitely part cat.
Not in the they, them, and those, and cats
right.
kind of way.
It's not her pronouns. It's just she's part cat. Her personality is part cat. It's
Riley
really
also said I'm part chihuahua recently.
You're part chihuahua.
I think the listeners, if they know anything about chihuahuas, they'd probably agree. So is that all of the story from the Institute for Justice?
It just kind of goes on to talk about how it's an abuse of your rights to do, and every state does this. They take your blood, but most states destroy it.
Whoa. Okay. You did say that every state takes the blood with the at least the heel prick, and they won't let you say no, but I didn't think about that. Like, does every other state destroy it?
Most states destroy it. It said earlier in the article that there was something in Texas happened with that. I know that in Utah, they destroyed it. It was
but
one of the things
that?
I was... Well, they say they destroy it.
Yeah.
I think they said 2 weeks. They they have it for 2 weeks while they do the screening, and then they destroy it.
Huh.
How do they destroy it? Like, burn it?
I don't know.
So weird.
Probably.
I don't even like that idea. Like, I really, there's this idea, and I can't think of it right now, but it's kind of like that the microcosm can affect the macrocosm. And, like, there were people that were testing things like, oh, using a picture of a bug, a specific type of bug, and a little drop of poison, you can, like, use your intention and basically, there were people actually doing this where they were going to farms using their intention, a picture of a bug and a drop of poison, and making that farm, that field, free of those bugs. And
interesting.
The thing is, like, we could get more into that, but I just don't like the idea of the government having a little microcosm of Bonnie, like, aka my DNA. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up.
The Shire Free Church offers a sanctuary to those seeking an escape from state churches.
The Shire Free Church is an interfaith, diverse group of people that may not share identical theological beliefs.
As a member in or minister of the Shire Free Church, you are a sovereign individual and may be the faith of your choice.
We don't claim to have all of the answers.
We are open to all peaceful people.
We want to learn from each other.
What unifies the Shire Free Church and its diverse members is peace,
love,
and liberty. There are many paths to God, one for every individual.
The Shire Free Church does not define a specific path beyond these parameters that must be your foundation.
Peace as your way.
Love as your guide.
And liberty as your light.
Learn more at church.shiresociety.com.
That's church.shiresociety.com. Radio that you control. And 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Lori. Riley.
Oh, and Lori.
Sorry,
we did it
usually
out of
Riley is sitting in the second chair, so you're probably used to
it. Yeah, I'm used to it, and so different orders. Sorry.
It's okay.
So it's Riley and Lori and me, Bonnie, on the show tonight. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there's no ticket cost and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party. And one thing that I've been wanting to bring up on this show for a while, because I thought it would definitely be a good Wednesday night topic, is this article from FEE, that's the Foundation for Economic Education, or FEE.org. I really like them. They're actually the first libertarian anything that I consumed. Like
I like Feed too. I like FAE. They're a really great organization. They talk about economics in an understandable form.
Yeah.
So the average person reading or learning about economics can understand the content and understand why the libertarian position on economics is the most reasonable.
Especially like a lot of their older stuff that was just like talking about a lot of basics. In 2015, before I actually even became a libertarian, so I knew that like a $15 minimum wage was bad because I was like, obviously everything's going to get more expensive because they'll just have to pay the employees more. Like we're not going to have a dollar menu anymore. I understood those like simple things that even like most right wingers understood. Cause I was like kind of a right winger. Cause like I just grew up with my parents being right wingers. And, but my sister was all like, oh, Bernie Sanders, $15 minimum wage, blah, blah, blah on Facebook. And I was telling her that was dumb. And my friend who was a libertarian was like talking to her about exactly why it was dumb. And I was like, wow, you know so much about this topic. Like, how do you know this about economics? Like, you didn't go to school for that. And he showed me Fee. So I was like, kind of like interested in that. And then once the cops arrested me for no reason, I really like just never stopped constantly consuming liberty media. Like, my parents were like, oh my gosh, that's all you ever do is listen to Tom Woods and Contra Krugman. Like, are you okay? Literally, like, you have no friends. You're just listening to Tom Woods. I feel like lots of people who just find out about these ideas, it's like intoxicating. Like, you can't stop reading about it and thinking about it. And like, you're like, wow, the world could be so much better. That's kind of what it's like about. It's like the world could be so much better. It's not just about changing the world to behave the way you want. It's like your life could be ideal and everyone's could.
Yeah, it could benefit everyone.
Right. Like the only people whose lives wouldn't benefit from more freedom is people who want to control your life.
Mm-hmm.
And they should just get over that because that would ultimately help their lives too. But most people are just too afraid of the unknown. Like they are just driven by fear. They're too afraid to face any change. And I think that is why this article makes a lot of sense. This article is titled, Self-Improvement is Inherently Pro-Liberty. And I think people who are afraid of change don't even want to improve themselves. They just think, I'm depressed. I am depressed. Depression is me. I will never change. I need a pill. Or that's just an example. Like, it could be anything else. Like, oh, I am whatever, but it will never change because I don't believe it can because I'm afraid to think of unknowns. And that's why they don't change themselves or improve themselves. And that's also why they believe in coercion.
Well, and it's hard. It's hard to improve yourself. It takes
effort,
and it's you unlearn everything that you learned in, you know, your whole life in a church or a school or by your parents. And people don't want to do it.
People want the certainty of religion. That's a great
point. Religion provides a lot of people certainty because they have a holy book you can refer to. And in Mormonism's case, you have these people calling themselves prophets who supposedly talk to God.
Whoa, there are people that right now call themselves prophets in Mormonism?
Prophets, seers, revelators.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, every conference, April and October, they're sustained and supported as such.
Hmm.
And these people supposedly have this connection, this divine connection, greater than anyone else to God.
That's terrible. I think everybody, I believe in like a spiritual side of the universe.
Yes,
and
I
believe
agree.
Everyone has the same access to it.
I agree with that.
That's terrible to tell people otherwise.
People are also scared to admit that they've been lied to their whole life.
That's so true.
I grew up my whole life. Everyone lied to me. And now I don't know. You know, how am I supposed to trust anyone that I thought loved me when they lied to me my whole life about all of these things?
To me, one thing that was terrifying, too, was just what if I am wrong to question Christianity and then I go to hell? And that is just like absolutely like abuse.
That's what made me stop. I was raised Catholic and I was told that I wasn't supposed to question it. And I was like, well, then it's not for me. I'm out of here. I was like 9.
I always really respect people who did that at such a young age. I didn't. But the thing was, I was just like, oh, great. Thank you. Thanks for giving me all these answers. Mm-mm. Like, you know, I was just like, oh, awesome. Like, and then I would ask my mom things. But my mom was like, she's the type of person to like, she would have a question and she would find the apologetic or whatever they call it answer. So I would have a question. My mom would give me her answer, you know, like, why did Jesus say this if this? And then she would give me the answer. And I was like, okay, great, thanks. Like, instead of being like I wasn't questioning at any point, like, if it was all true, because I just believed it was. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, so for me, I actually delved into apologetics myself when I came to Mormonism. I had some experiences in my life where I felt like I needed to do that, where I needed to really learn about my faith tradition and how to defend it better. And it didn't take me until my 30s to decide, you know, this is not the spiritual path that is most beneficial. I don't think the church claims are true, because you'd have to engage in a lot of fallacious reasoning, like special pleading, to suggest that your church is the one true church and the one true path. I mean, Islam makes the same claim. Christianity makes the same claim. There are branches of Christianity that make similar claims. And so how can your church be the one true church? And if I have to take your claims on pure faith alone, then really you have nothing to support your statements.
I think what saved me and got me into that early was I was a big nerd who liked to go sit in the library in my free time and read. And so I just read everything that I could get my hands
on.
At
9?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Like reference books. Like I'd read reference books for fun. We had like all these encyclopedias and stuff, and I'd read them and just absorb all the information and like all these religions and all these different political views and stuff like that. And so I was always just, if I can't question it myself and find the answers myself, then it's not for me. If you're going to tell me that I can't question this thing, then I don't want to be any part of it.
That's a great policy.
If you can't tell me I can't question the prophet,
I don't want any part of your religion. I don't want any part of it.
If you can tell me that I cannot question God himself, then I don't want to be part of your religion.
My dad was really sad at one point, and he told me, wouldn't you rather believe and be wrong than not believe and be wrong? And I was like, that's not really how believing something works. You can't just make yourself believe something. Maybe some people can, but I cannot make myself believe something.
I think about that a lot. I wonder how many people really don't believe it, but they are trying to force it.
Yeah. Because, how,
like,
though?
Once I grew up and I could like think of things in a different way, I thought about other people in my life who didn't act like Christians, but they were part of the church and they were, you know, call themselves Christians. And I'm like, do they just not really believe it? Like, what's going on in their brains? It's really weird.
Because they have like
cognitive dissonance.
Maybe? Yeah. Well, and they pick which things to believe and which things not to believe in this thing that you're believing. How do you believe a thing, but only parts of it?
Right. And like Jesus, they believe will put you in hell for not believing like any of it, but yet, like, they, you know,
other Christians will condemn other Christians to hell. I know Christian groups have condemned Mormons to hell and Catholics
to
hell.
Well, yeah, definitely. Just most Mormons don't realize that all other Christians think you're going to hell.
Yeah.
Like, and seriously.
And that's the thing, too. Growing up Catholic, it was like, oh, well, you can do anything and just apologize for it and go to heaven.
Yeah.
And
if you don't believe or you question it, you're going to hell. Like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
It doesn't make any sense.
If I'm a good person and I can't go to heaven because I'm a good person because I didn't
apologize,
eat the bread or do whatever you told me to do, then I don't want to go there anyway. It sounds like it's full of terrible people.
Yeah. I would suggest that if there's a perfect, all-knowing, all-loving God and he created us to question, then I would hope that that God would want question and inquiry and us to figure out what our spiritual paths are and figure out what resonates with us.
I just think like the regular human love that I've experienced in my life is so much nicer than the love described by most Christians about their own God.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be like so much more loving than like anything you've ever experienced. And yet that's what comes out of it. Like a person that would send anyone to hell. My husband would never put anyone in hell.
Yeah. And besides, heaven sounds kind of boring. We're just sitting around praising Jesus all the time.
Yeah, and of course there's the apologies that are like, well, it wouldn't be boring to you then because it would be blissful. And also, like, I don't know.
How do we understand bliss if we can't understand the opposite of it?
I don't know how anyone claims to know that they're right anyway.
Yeah. I don't
either. Never been there. You've never met that guy or girl or entity.
Well, that's why there's a huge, huge market for stories of people who went to heaven. And when I was a kid,
near-death experience books.
Well, you know, that's different. Well, like, I think near-death experiences
are totally
different.
How come none of these people
different.
Ever go to hell?
No, they do.
Oh.
And I hate those books, too. And I really think most of it's fake. Like, there's one called 23 Minutes in Hell, I think it's called. 23 Minutes in Hell. I might be saying that because that number came up earlier in the show. So I don't remember how many minutes. But, like, I think it's 23 Minutes in Hell. And like, it's a book that people like my mom and other people will give to people to be like, listen, you need to really need to read this. And it says like, basically like, if you like, I got taken to hell just so God could bring me back so I could tell you guys what it's like. And it's constantly your face is melting off and blah, blah, blah.
Sounds incorrect.
It does. And it's also just like, anyone can say that. I'm sorry. Like, with
yeah, anyone can say that without evidence.
With the near-death experiences, there are tons of studies where people who have no connection with each other in very good, you know, like clinical environments where there was like no like passing information between this other person on the other side of the planet that had the same experience. Like, if you really look into that, there is a lot of actual like evidence that these people aren't lying. And there just isn't that for people who say that they went to heaven.
I mean, when you die, your brain is just firing off neurons.
But that's been studied.
All crazy. So who knows? You're probably hallucinating.
That's been studied. Like, I think that everybody who thinks they have a theory about it should really look into it, because there are controls for things like that. Like, they can try to inhibit, they can try to induce the same things like that to people, and like, you don't get an experience of all-knowing, loving being hugging you. I mean, it's not necessarily just hugging you, but I'm just trying to like simplify it for people. The other thing is, like, I've experienced something pretty close to a near-death experience, so like, nobody's gonna tell me that I didn't experience that.
Okay.
And it's just like, if you experience something yourself, like, it's a lot different than like your parents telling you you'll go to hell. And just like, even my experience alone tells me that I just don't believe that people go to hell and get their face burned off. Like, according to tons of people, this woman that I know that died should be in hell. And I just don't believe she is, because like, I was in a coma and I saw her smiling and walking in a field, and she was just like psychically telling me, like, not without her mouth moving, like, everything's good, I am doing amazing, and I have to go that way, and you can't come with me.
Huh. And interesting.
Yeah, I just, like, it was like no words were exchanged. I was just like, oh, I can't walk any further with you. I was like holding her hand, and she was able to keep going. And she wasn't just like, she was like not just like normal, she was like extremely beaming happy, like super happy, and she was going to keep going that way towards like this light. And I don't know, I just don't see why my brain would make that up. I barely knew this woman, actually. I was like, knew her for like a week and then got in a car accident with her and she died. So like, it's like, why would my brain do that? Like,
I don't not believe. I mm-hmm. also don't believe. Mm-hmm. I don't know, because right. I've never been there and I've never done it. I think we're all just energy, and we're all just a big collective energy. And when you die, your energy goes back into the collective and then and then gets put somewhere else.
Right. I agree with that too. And I think that that would be a fantastic feeling, because in general, everything that's real is usually great, and everything that is bad is usually fake. So mm-hmm. if you get put back into the energy of everything that is, I can't see that being anything but awesome.
Yeah.
Like, fear is just fake. It's just,
imagine how good that would feel, like, we're all the energy being whole.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds awesome.
That
yeah.
does sound awesome.
And you know, just like, that's kind of like the definition of happiness, is like everything being in its place and being like belonging. That's like the foundation of happiness.
Yeah. You have to think too, like, how much other people affect you, like mm-hmm. just their energy being around somebody can affect you energetically. Being around someone who's angry makes you feel bad.
Yeah.
Being around someone who's sad makes you feel bad. Like, negative energy from someone else makes you feel negative.
And that is just one reason, a huge reason that I hate, like, I don't hate, but I don't like people who are like scientism, because it's just like, you know, you have that experience in your life that you can feel people's energy. Like, everybody, most people know that. Like, just the other day, Riley and I watched the eclipse, and he was like, there's definitely an energy about it. There just was. Like,
there is. It's hard to explain.
It is.
But there definitely is an energy shift as the eclipse goes across the United States.
I have told people this before, and I definitely think it's true, that I know what a Sunday feels like. If I was like in a coma and woke up and no one told me what day it was, I feel like I would know if it was a Sunday. And only a Sunday. And somebody said to me, something that was pretty, honestly, pretty smart, and it might be the case. They were like, you're just feeling the, like, relaxed energy of all the people around you and, like, the houses around you. I was like, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
honestly,
the energy
that would be
around you.
Just as cool as it being that I feel Sundays.
Well, so, like, we went to Sedona in Arizona, and, like, that place itself has, like, a mellow energy. Like, you just feel...
That sounds
like the
lovely.
Earth is healing you when you're there.
I want to go there so bad. I've only been to like the crappiest parts of Arizona. Then again, I like Prescott or Prescott, however you say that. Mm. But like, there are parts of Arizona that I didn't know America was that third world.
Yeah, right.
Like mattresses outside in a yard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's so scary. And like no doors on houses and stuff like that. I don't know why I brought that part up. I was just gonna say, because it's like, it has nothing to do with the government state lines. I think that the energies of places have a lot more to do with, like, I don't know, the people there and like the experiences they've had there, probably. Like, I definitely think my house has a really good energy.
It does.
Aw, thank you.
That's a very nice energy.
I never feel scared in my house. Like, to fall asleep in a room alone doesn't scare me. And I've always been, like, the type of person that needs to, like, be like, okay, don't think of anything scary, like, right before bed until I lived in this house.
Huh.
And even when Ian went to jail the first time, I thought that I'd be, like, creeped out. And I was only creeped out of people. I was, like, always checking my closet before I went to bed because somebody could have came in here and went and hid in my closet until I fell asleep. Not because of, like, the energy.
I do it, too. Punch the shower curtain.
Really?
Anyway, in there?
Yeah.
Yeah. The house isn't creepy, but like people.
People, exactly. Yeah. People could be in there. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Like, if I wanted to ask if your house was also, it had an energy that you thought was a good energy.
I think it's kind of neutral. It's not like I don't feel warm and at peace like you do some places, but I also don't feel weirded out or scared or anything. I have lived in houses where I'm like, this place is creeping me out. I don't want to be here alone. Like, I can go to sleep fine there by myself if Sue's not there. It's just neutral, which is fine.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any like scary place. Have you seen anything unexplainable, or is it just a feeling?
When I was a little kid, my aunt and uncle lived in this house. And there was, in the basement, there was like a door, but it was all blocked off with dirt. And it really creeped me out.
That's creepy.
Yeah, being down there.
Why is it blocked off with dirt?
I don't know.
Okay.
There was like another room down there, but the door to that room was like, the whole room was filled in with dirt.
Whoa, okay,
and so
wow.
It always really weirded me out. And one time we were there, and I was upstairs in bed, and I had like this big giant bed. My aunt was laying in the bed next to me. We were watching something, and my sister was asleep in the other bed in the same room. It was like our bedroom, shared bedroom at my aunt's house.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard my uncle call my name. I think I told you about this.
I think I'm remembering it now, but you should finish. I don't think Riley's heard it.
So I went downstairs. I was like, Uncle Tom's home. And I ran downstairs. She's like, he's not, because he used to travel around the country for business. And I went down there, and there was nobody there. And that house was just creepy in general. And like a little while later, like a couple years later, we found out the people across the street found like bones in their basement, like bodies.
Wow, that's really scary.
Did you ever find out anything about the dirt room?
No, I never found out.
That's really creepy.
I sometimes like look up the house online to see if there's anything, but I've never found anything.
So you heard a voice say, Lori.
Yeah, it was like a man's voice, like a really deep man's voice. It was creepy.
That's terrifying.
That is a little terrifying.
Yeah.
But, you know, ghosts and energies do hang around places sometimes.
I don't know. That house was scary. It did not feel... It didn't feel like a nice place to be. There was like upstairs, there was a little playroom we had to keep our toys in. And I refused to go in there to go. Like, I'd go in and get my toys. I'd run in and get my stuff and come back out. It wasn't even a basement. It was upstairs in the second floor. And my bedroom was right next to it. And no other room really creeped me out like that room. It was awful.
I remember when I was a kid being afraid of being alone more because of like the fact of being alone than like the specific house I was in. And I just remember this one feeling where anytime I was like in a room alone, it probably has a lot to do with the fact that I had a big family and I was like never alone. So when I was, it was weird. So like if I was in a room alone, I'd be like, okay, I'll go in there alone because I really want to get like my toy or whatever it was. But I'd be quick about it because, like, if I was sitting there alone for too long, I would start to feel this feeling like my back was, like, burning and cold at the same time. It's so weird. Like, I would just, like, be like, I feel something behind me. It's, like, burning and cold. We have a caller, though. Gigi in South Carolina. Gigi, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Mrs. Freeman. Always
good
wonderful
evening.
To hear your beautiful, sweet voice.
Oh, thank you. It's great
My
to hear from you.
I received three fantastic letters from Ian.
Oh, that's good news.
It is wonderful. God bless him. He keeps his spirits up. He does yoga. He reads the Wall Street Journal, and he's getting fruit and cauliflower and lettuce and tomato.
Yay!
And on every meal tray, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner, he's getting skim milk.
Wow.
That was new. Oh, that's new.
This is good.
Excellent.
And this is healthy. Do I sound like a Jewish mother?
You do. Well, unfortunately, he's been moved to a different jail, so we'll see
oh,
what
yeah,
happens.
I needed to let you know that, Gigi. So, just so you know, right now, all letters to Ian should cease for now because he got moved to another county jail in New Hampshire for now until he gets the bus to come take him to
a federal facility. Yeah, my husband and I were wondering about that.
It just happened yesterday out of the blue.
Well, that's okay. I'm glad you told me because
I'm glad you called.
I was going to have Jeffrey mail some letters to him, but I will hold off until he gives us his new address. But I want to tell you something.
Okay.
I wrote something to Ian, something personal, and your husband wrote back that he 100%, pardon me for coughing in your ears, agreed. I never realized that Ian is very, very interested in international relations and geography and the world. And let me tell you, it's like having a soulmate on Pen Pal, because I'm so passionate about that subject academically and personally, and your husband expressed exactly the same thing. And when I read his letters and my husband reads his letters and he writes about pick the country, pick the continent, pick the politician, it's so wonderful to share that in common with someone. And he wrote us about his attorneys and the Liberty Project and the issues all compiled together for one appeal.
That's also
equally passionate for me and my husband because
Gigi,
Jeffrey
that's the bumper
does
music.
A lot of appeals in South Carolina.
If you want to continue, I'm sorry I had to cut you off there, but that's the bumper music. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. Don't go anywhere. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live.
Eleutheromania, the insatiable desire for freedom. It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. It's talk radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number. That's 603-283-6160. And I would like to thank Dan Harjas. Wow, I don't know how to say the last name. Dan Harjas, who's a silver level amplifier with us here at Free Talk Live. That means that Dan helps to advertise, market, promote, and support Free Talk Live. So therefore, he's part of the AMPS program. And if you would like to check out the AMPS program and get some perks and benefits for helping out us here at Free Talk Live, you can go to amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com. Thank you so much to Dan. We really appreciate everyone's help who contributes to the AMP program, AMPS program. And with you in the studio on Free Talk Live tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Lori.
And Riley.
And we really went into all kinds of different subjects in last conversation. But basically here on Free Talk Live, we're always talking about liberty. And one thing about liberty is that you should have the freedom to talk about whatever you want. So we always answer when Sarah from New Mexico calls. Sarah, what's on your mind?
Yes, you know, even though it's Free Talk Live, I would like to talk with something that has value to life, such as this brand new bus station depot in Valencia County, which is about 10-15 miles south of Albuquerque. So what's amazing is that it's called, I think, Belen or Las Lunas, one of the small towns, and they never had any kind of bus line there whatsoever. So they had a big, huge ribbon cutting ceremony, and I'm just excited, you know, because I might want to buy a house later and move there, you know, if there's a bus that takes you to the grocery store and to a mall and bring you back, you know, I'll just take any bus. So usually these small towns, they got that one main road, or they call that a central road, and it's the only one road with the shops on it, and it goes through the city. And mm-hmm. I think they might have a bus line going through it. Isn't that how it is usually?
I have no idea. I've never even used public transit ever. I've always wanted freedom. Therefore, I've always wanted to have my own car.
I've used public transit, and I would suggest that, you know, buses are going to go to places where there's people who are going to ride the buses typically, or demand for it somewhere. So, I mean, they're not going to put a bus out to the middle of the, out to the, where, New Hampshire?
What's your destination? Well, I went to a lot of these bus meetings. They're going to have a lot of bus, but then they have comments like, where do you go? It's always the central New Mexico. It's the community college, the university, and it's the mall. So where do you go? So that's usually their stopping spots. You know what I mean? So, and it's always the central. Every small town, they always have this main street. If it's like a really small town, they got this one road that goes right through the city. And so I think this town doesn't have much of population or much of anything, but it's attractive to me because I mean, it's the land might be cheaper. The houses might be cheaper for what you get. And it might be a lot more peace and quiet. If they have one bus to take you to the Walmart shopping area and to the mall or something, goes by at shopping, like groceries, and bring you back. Like I'm all it. So I'm just excited. And
I'm glad you're excited.
I'm a bus person. I've never owned a car. I mean, I could drive, but I hate driving. You know what? I hate driving because the road rage. You know, the people that are like right behind you and they're screaming and yelling at you to check. Right, or I mean, I would have a nervous breakdown.
Exactly.
My nerves can't take it.
You're afraid of the idea that somebody might get mad at you, yell at you, and possibly harm you. You're very afraid of the unknown, and that's why you believe that we need a government to keep us all safe from people with road rage.
Well, I can't. You know, I like to be really safe when I make a left or a right. I just want to make sure that, but they want me to just turn a left or a right when they feel like it's safe enough for me. And I just can't deal with it. But I just want to also say there's a town of Anthony on the border of New Mexico, and I recently heard that there's a bus line that actually takes you down to El Paso. I don't know if it's like 10 miles.
I never take that bus. I hate El Paso. I'm sorry, Sarah. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just hate El Paso so much. It's gross.
Oh, really? Have you been there before?
Yeah.
What is so gross about it? The only thing that is really gross it's their, was it? They still got refineries. I just couldn't believe it.
What is that?
I went there and I'm really
oil refineries.
Yeah, the oil refineries. It's like, is that for real? Because I don't see those in New Mexico because we're all about clean energy. So I'm like, this is Texas. And I went there and high inversion days, like where the air compresses down really cold.
Inversion, and I was like, worse than that, makes the
suffocating, huh?
Yeah, inversion also just makes the air quality super bad. I didn't really know that's like a thing that happens in El Paso. I hear about it in like mountainous areas, but El Paso was gross. Like literally you're like sitting there and like dust is flying all around everywhere or like sand or something. It's not really sand. It's just like dirt. And just like the city is ugly. Everybody looks scary and mean. There's not like, I mean, I'm not, it's not like I've like spent life, like a life there or something. Just like whenever I've had to drive through and I'm like, I'm getting out of here. Me and my friend drove from Las Vegas to San Antonio. I was helping her move and she just wants somebody to go with her for the drive. And we purposely drove past El Paso and slept in our car and just like a little bit outside of it to just not be that close to it. It was just, it's creepy. It's gross. I was like microdosing shrooms, not even like super tripping or anything. And I was just like, I have a bad feeling about this place. It's gross. Like I was like, I feel this like uneasy stomach.
Yeah, mushrooms can definitely make you sensitive to energies for sure.
Oh, I didn't think that it was all that bad or all that good, except that refinery with that. I couldn't believe that the chimneys of like, this is Texas. I mean, it was like the most, I don't see that in the Albuquerque area. I do not see that up in Taos or Santa Fe, because our state, we find Texas for, we found their oil companies polluting close to Las Cruces, that area, the border area. We find them millions of dollars. There were some friends, the bus riders that are working on a bus line in Anthony, town of Anthony, and they accomplished a bus line hooking up all the way down, connecting with the little buses that hook you up with El Paso. So mm-hmm. I'm just amazed. And this brand new bus line in Las Lunas, Valencia County, it's south of Albuquerque. So I'm just blown away of all these accomplishments.
Okay, Sarah. Well, I like to let Sarah to let the people maybe listening in Albuquerque know about this news that she is excited about. I'm happy you're excited, Sarah. Ultimately, I think it's terrible to steal from people just because you don't want to take turns very fast. So you don't want to take your turns fast enough for the people behind you. And it's probably not just that. It's probably like she's suddenly like slamming on her brake and taking a super slow turn, making dangerous conditions on the road. I'm just going to go ahead and guess that.
Sitting at the light forever after it turns green.
Oh, my God.
It sounds like driving a convenient adventure sometimes.
Thank you for the call, Sarah. In the last segment, we started talking about the Foundation for Economic
Before
Education.
We move on to back to our article.
Sorry about that, Ryan.
I have something I want to promote. So in Concord, New Hampshire, on April 20th at 4:20, I am organizing a cannabis freedom rally, and if you partake of cannabis or you support cannabis freedom, come out to Concord, New Hampshire at the State House.
Yes, I'm going to be there, and I'm very excited about this. May happen that day, too.
The Bitcoin happening, where the block rewards for the Bitcoin miners gets cut in half.
Yes, and that could make interesting things happen. That could make the price of Bitcoin go up a lot. Some people say it's going to go down a lot. I'm just excited to see what happens. Honestly, Bitcoin, if it was just worth $1, Bitcoin would be a huge success.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's not about the price of the Bitcoin. It's about what it's useful for. And it's useful as money outside the current government system. The thing is, people are getting into it because number go up.
Yep. And I think that is kind of silly in a way. It's like, it's silly because it's just like, it's such a good
technology. It's silly
technology.
Because it's ignoring the technology and the use case of Bitcoin, which is as a currency, a peer-to-peer currency that doesn't rely on a bank or a government to mine it or bring it into existence.
I agree. It's already accomplished the most important task it needed to accomplish, which is that it gives people an opportunity to use something other than blood money and the demonic, I don't really mean that literally, but the disgusting, evil, that's the word, system of the fiat monetary system in the United States with the Federal Reserve and just their decree that you must use this dollar and that it's worth this amount when really all it is a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I like it, because it's freedom to choose what you want to use to purchase things with. If and everybody also, wanted to trade acorns, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah. And also, you know, I'm sure, I don't know about you, Lori, but they're Bonnie and I are fans of silver and gold because it's not because the numbers, the value of gold goes up. It's
I really
because
forget you guys don't know each other.
Retains its value.
Yeah, I'm a fan of silver and gold.
Good.
But I mean, I'll trade in anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll trade in anything anyone wants to trade in. You want some cake? I'll bake you a cake if you give me something I want in return. I love
and
trading.
And Lori makes really, really good
I think
sweets.
That's good too.
I don't think I've specifically eaten cake she made, but Lori makes everything so freaking delicious.
I like trading. I usually use things that are not currency as much as I can.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, especially now when we're not in a situation of dire need, like bartering makes like a whole lot of sense. Like, oh, Lori makes a delicious cake and she wants something that's perishable. Like, maybe that would be a bad idea if it was like,
I want a chicken. I'll bake you a cake for your chicken. Give me your chicken. I'll give you the cake if you want the cake. Oh. You know, like anything. I'll just take a thing that I want from you and you take a thing you want from me. If we decide that those things are equal value, then now they're equal value.
And that is ideal in the least middle man or middle chunk of silver situation.
Mm-hmm.
I really just like the idea that people in New Hampshire right now are using all these alternative currencies.
Exactly. We're practicing how to use gold and silver and use gold backs to trade gold. We use
and silver. Cryptocurrency.
Oh, yeah. We use cryptocurrency here. I pay my rent in cryptocurrency. It's really nice to be in a community of people that I can really connect with.
Mm-hmm. And I just think that most people in the country who don't think about these types of things do so because they're like Sarah. They want to be safe above all else. They don't care about freedom. And that's why their lives will never improve. We were getting into this story from the Foundation for Economic Education in the last segment. It's titled, Self-Improvement is Inherently Pro-Liberty. And I just really like this topic. I really am into like learning the ways I can better myself, like making my life better for myself. It's all stuff that takes effort, stuff that takes work. And I totally agree that it is inherently pro-liberty. And people who start, if you start reading any of these like people who want you to like, you know, self-improvement books, if you get really deep into them, freedom is often a theme that you can't help but run into at some point.
Oh, of course. Like, you know, reading The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz or The Mastery of Love by Don Miguel Ruiz. These are all about freedom. These are all about how to maintain personal freedom in your personal life so that you're happier. And when you enslave yourself to an ideology or fear of the unknown or things like that, it's a challenge to overcome these experiences because you don't want to change. You don't want to step out into the unknown and say, wait a minute, my world doesn't seem the same. I'm going to question everything about this world.
Most people don't want to do that.
No, they don't. They want to think. They want someone to think for them, or they want to stick to the old ideologies because their parents did so, or grandparents did so.
Tons of people are getting into this topic. Whether or not that has led them to freedom is the answer. What's the question? Yet, I think that ultimately we're heading in a right direction. This says, the number one best-selling book in the world last week, even though this was written in February of this year, was Atomic Habits, An Easy and Proven Way to Build Good Habits and Break Bad Ones by James Clear. I haven't heard of it. Sounds like a pretty good book. He says, to be extra clear, it wasn't just the top book in its category, but the top book, period. That is an especially remarkable feat, as overall bestseller lists are typically dominated by works of fiction. I don't get that. I don't get it.
Why don't you get it?
I just think fiction can be so boring. I want to learn real things.
I mean, I agree with you. I want to learn real things too, but sometimes it's nice to go in, off into a fantasy world and stimulate your imagination.
I think it's sometimes nice. I just do not understand most consumed stuff being fiction. I can't wrap my mind around it.
Most people are unhappy with their lives.
Hmm. It's a way to escape.
Yeah, they use it as an escape, and they read, like, a lot of people read garbage too.
The other thing is
romance novels and stuff are
that
really
is garbage.
Yeah, like a really top seller thing people buy. I don't even understand why people buy it.
A good friend of mine, I love her so much, and she is an intelligent person and a libertarian. She asked me about what could she read to learn about seed oils. She's like, I see you talking about it. I want to know the facts. I gave her a book, and then a week later she texted me, Bonnie, I'm reading the book you told me, and it's the first time I've ever had anything that wasn't pure smut on my Kindle. I was like, seriously?
Wow, that's wild.
Hear about girls reading that stuff, and I think that I honestly think it's mostly girls reading porn on their, men, they want to see the porn. Women, they want to think about it. So
they want to have a scenario about it. Yeah,
I don't understand
really
that.
I don't either. Well, okay, I understand the theory. I think I and most women are more intellectually stimulated by sexual talk, and men are more just I see boobs and now things are happening.
Yeah,
I think it would have to be both.
It would definitely have to be both. Ultimately,
You can't just have. I could never just have it just written down on paper and be like, wow.
No, yeah.
How?
That is also the case.
Titillating.
I wouldn't be interested enough to read those books or anything, but I can understand intellectually why they like it, especially if you're single. You could also just live these things.
It sparks your imagination to dream of a prince who's going to come save you from your life.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, man, that's kind of sad, but... I definitely think that that's why fiction is more popular than nonfiction. It's the same thing as I'm sure that fake, made up stories in movies and book, or sorry, movies and TV shows are more popular than documentaries. Mm-hmm. Even though people do watch documentaries and they can get really popular and stuff, I'd say number one is always probably something that's fiction. Or I don't know if you'd say fiction about a movie.
Yeah, they don't show documentaries at the movie theater.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that would be really cool. Mm-hmm. I never really thought about that. Why aren't top documentaries being shown at the local movie theater? That would be really cool.
One of my favorite things ever growing up was when we went to the Science Museum and we went to the IMAX theater and they did the documentary on that big IMAX screen. Mm-hmm. Or it wasn't the IMAX, it was a planetarium theater.
Oh,
wow.
And so it was all 3D.
Wow.
It was a nature documentary. You were flying over the savannah and the
That's
animals,
so cool.
And it looked like you were actually there. It was kind of unsettling because it looked like you were there flying over it, and you're like, am I going to fall out of my seat? But
that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I've never been to those planetarium things.
That'd be great if they did that on a regular basis at a movie theater, had one of those where you could just go watch documentaries. That'd be wonderful. I'd go all the time.
Why don't they? Seriously, I think that people would go to that.
I don't go to the regular movies, but I'd go to that.
I have went to the movies a lot last year just because of Ian. Ian definitely is more of a movie person and makes me end up wanting to watch movies with him. But I think that's not the topic we were talking about. I can so easily get distracted on Wednesdays because you guys always have lots of interesting thoughts about things.
We just distracting you and getting you off the rails a little bit.
That's also just what Free Talk Live is about. And you can call 603-283-6160 if you would like to join in the conversation or change the topic. 603-283-6160. So this article, it starts off saying that the number one best-selling book in the world was Atomic Habits, An Easy and Proven Way to Build Good Habits and Break Bad Ones by James Clear. He says, it's quite something for a nonfiction book to be outselling even the hottest romance novels. It's funny. And it's no flash in the pan either. The title has been topping the charts since its release half a decade ago. Wow.
Wow.
I didn't realize that it was a big book. An old book. I'd never heard of it. Since then, it has been on Publishers Weekly's top 10 overall list for 194 weeks and has, of mid-2023, over 15 million copies had been purchased. Such staying power and volume indicates not just effective marketing, but satisfied readers and enthusiastic word of mouth. It says the atomic habits phenomenon is an encouraging one. In recent years, we have seen many troubling signs of cultural decay. Yet at the same time, we also are seeing a counter trend of millions seeking to build better versions of themselves and finding an effective guidebook for doing so. That is cause for hope. I really do agree. Sometimes I feel very like black-pilled about the world at large. But just the idea of so many people just even just talking about and titillating their brains with the idea of self-improvement, I think that's just the most important thing. And like we were mentioning, I think it will lead to people becoming more freedom-minded.
Oh, I agree. I think when people improve themselves overall, they're more willing to be freedom-minded. They're more willing to be happier. They're able to be happier because they're choosing better choices.
I agree. He started off explaining that thing about the one book, and he told us that this is a trend going on with people looking to find effective guidebooks for bettering themselves. He goes on and says, "What's the big deal? How, a skeptic might ask, is a bunch of people improving their habits supposed to reverse cultural decay?" I really don't like that term. Ew. It's just like something is not right about it. Like, I don't like the idea of cultural decay. Like, oh, we should be in some kind of culture, like one specific culture, and if we're not, it's decay. I don't like that term.
Understand that. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, people want culture to be a certain way.
Yeah, they want it to stay the same.
Yeah.
603-283-6160. But how is self-improvement inherently pro-liberty? We'll get into it when we come back. 603-283-6160. Don't go anywhere. It's Free Talk Live. Control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. You can join the conversation with us. That's 603-283-6160. And I would like to let the listeners know that we are on TikTok. We have a TikTok account. It's at Free Talk Live. No spaces or anything. So very easy to find. And you can go there to watch clips of Free Talk Live, or if you want to share clips with people, it's the best way to share like a quick little piece of Free Talk Live because it's, you know, short for TikTok. And I really appreciate our listener who is voluntarily doing Free Talk Live for us. He's looking to get us to a certain amount of followers on TikTok so that we can go live on there, and that'll be really great. It's at Free Talk Live on TikTok, and you should follow us there if you're on TikTok. In the studio with you on Free Talk Live tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Lori.
Riley.
And in the last segment, we were talking about why it is that self-improvement is inherently pro-liberty. And we had just started discussing this term, this author. His name is Dan Sanchez. He keeps talking about cultural decay. I don't know how he defines it. I don't really like that word, but he is apparently pro-liberty and writes for the Foundation for Economic Education. So I hope he just means, you know, like people going more towards an immoral mindset. People, you know, I think it would be great if people, everybody who used like the term like cultural decay was just saying like, oh, it's cultural decay when people start believing they can steal from their neighbors to fund a bus and stuff like that.
Oh, I definitely think that's cultural decay. But, you know, I think a lot of people on the right especially would say that cultural decay is the homosexuals and the trans people and the big government programs and things like that taking care of these people. That to them is cultural decay.
That's why I just wanted
women wanting to govern their bodies and vote.
Wear pants. Yeah, I just wanted to point it out that like I don't think this author would be using it like that. So I don't know. I just wanted to point that out. It's a weird word or two words. What am I trying to say? Term. It's a weird term. I don't like it. But he's using it here in this article. So let's move on. He says, a conservative critic might argue that a moral degenerate with a fine-tuned morning routine is still a moral degenerate. In fact, better habits might only empower such reprobates to be more effective in disseminating their perverse values. The last thing we need is Netflix scriptwriters improving their daily creative process and cranking out more youth-corrupting poison. Cultural decay, our critic might say, can only be combated with a culture war, with champions of the good thing battling the forces of evil in order to reform the values of others, not people in general reforming themselves. I think this author is like exactly on our theological side, not theological, theoretical side.
I think so too.
I think that he's kind of saying exactly what we'd say about the right. A libertarian doubter might add that the root cause of our cultural decay is that big government is strangling individual liberty and perverting incentives. We can't self-improve our way out of that. I think he's being sarcastic there.
I think so too, yeah.
A socialist on a better diet will just be around longer to clamor for more tyranny. Civilizational decline, our doubter may insist, can only be reversed through a war of ideas, through champions of the truth skewering collectivist facilities in order to reform the thinking of others. Again, not people in general reforming themselves. Both the conservative and the libertarian might agree that only a strategic focus on political change, getting the right people in office and the right laws in the books will save us. Yeah, I think that's really silly to think that is going to help your life much, like who's in office. And
it doesn't matter who's in political office. Like, I've been around for 38 years and there hasn't been a political office or a president that has changed my life so dramatically that I have to go on the radio and talk about how great this so-called president was.
No, I'll talk about how terrible they are, though.
Oh, yeah, we can talk about how terrible Obama was, Bush was, Clinton
and
was,
do
Bush
the same
was.
Thing. It doesn't really matter who's in office.
Right.
Even if they are terrible, that one would have been just as terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I also do like this topic that he's hinting at here, saying like changing yourself is the most effective thing, more effective than trying to change other people.
And if everyone betters themselves, the whole world gets better.
Yes, that sounds exactly right to me. I just like this idea that you can totally try to influence other people, but you can't change them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's not that I really like it. I just think that it is true.
Yeah.
Just appears true to me.
Yeah, you can't make anyone do anything. I even teach that to the kids, my little kids. I tell them, like, you can't control what other people do. You can only control how you react to it.
Yeah. How old is your youngest? You mind my asking?
4.
Okay.
Yeah. A 4 and a 5-year-old.
Wow.
I'm busy.
That's a great...
sounds like it.
Yeah.
Like, lesson to have already learned at 4 and 5. Because I know that that would save me a lot of frustration. Like, oh, you can't, like, force other people to behave however you want. All you can do is change how you react to what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to have, like, really bad, like, anger problems back in the day. Well, maybe I shouldn't say I had anger problems, but I was angry for a lot of the time. And the government even sent me to anger management classes. But if I would have just thought about things differently...
Did the anger management classes work?
No.
I've never been to an anger management class. What did they teach you?
I was just telling my dad the other day, one thing I really didn't like about that guy was he kept telling me something was wrong with me. And I kept telling him, like, no, like, these are the situations in my life that I'm frustrated with and I need to change them, like, as in I need to move. And he kept being like, no, when you move to Texas, because I lived in a tiny, tiny town, like 150 people.
Mm-hmm.
When you move to Texas, you're taking yourself with you. You'll have the same problems there. No, literally, I moved to Texas. I made a change in my life that changed, like, everything for the better. Like, not everything was perfect because that's just life, but all of those things I was complaining about that were making me angry changed because I took the incentive to move out of that place. I just don't like this idea that a lot of like therapists and people nowadays altogether have that like you have something wrong with you and you need to like take a pill or something. It's just like, yeah, you might need to work on yourself, and I did need to work on myself, but also sometimes fixing an external thing in your life, like your diet or where you live, can make you better. And it's like a therapist trying to tell me that, no, you have anger. No matter what you do, you'll have this anger with you. Like, that is such BS.
Hmm.
I was complaining about that to my dad, because my dad, when he got out of the military, he ended up working for that guy.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I didn't like him. So the next little headline here in the article says, whom to improve. One libertarian who saw things differently was Leonard E. Reed, the founder of the Foundation for Economic Education. Oh, in his book, Elements of Libertarian Leadership, Reed wrote, all individuals are faced with the problem of whom to improve, themselves or others. Their aim, it seems to me, should be to affect their own unfolding, the upgrading of their own consciousness, in short, self-perfection. Wow, that's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Never read this guy. Have you guys? Mm-hmm.
I have
read?
Not.
Nope.
Those who don't even try, or when trying, find self-perfection too difficult, usually seek to expend their energy on others. Control freaks. I added that. Their energy has to find some target. Those who succeed in directing their energy inward, particularly if they be blessed with great energy, like Goethe. Is that how you say the name? Goethe? I think it's something von Goethe. Maybe Ludwig. Yeah, I think it's Goethe, but I don't know.
How's it spelled?
G-O-E-T-H-E.
I think it's Goethe, yeah.
So, if they're blessed with great energy, like Goethe, for instance, become moral leaders. Those who fail to direct their energy inward and let it manifest itself externally, particularly if they be of great energy, like Napoleon, for instance, become immoral leaders.
Mm.
Those who refuse to rule themselves are usually bent on ruling others. Those who can rule themselves usually have no interest in ruling others. That was great. That makes me really want to read this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. That sounds fantastic.
It's called The Elements of Libertarian Leadership. Really interesting.
And it makes sense, too. Who do you want to listen to? Somebody who has their life together, they're intelligent, they're doing well, or somebody who just wants to yell orders?
Yeah.
And their own life is in shambles.
I
want to
listen to someone who's going to yell orders at me and tell me what God wants me to do for my life.
Right, and their whole life is in shambles. They're unhappy, but they want to control other people.
Yeah.
But they can't even control themselves.
Napoleon's a great example there, too, because that's like a word people will use for like a control freak.
Mm-hmm.
Like just somebody who's like, oh, I'm mad. I'm a little short person. Like apparently he was short. It's like,
I think he was like 5'7". I think that's a myth.
Oh,
or
really?
5'8", something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's normal. Probably even tall for back then.
Yeah. I think he just felt self-conscious about himself because he wasn't happy with himself.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible. Yeah.
It seems like Napoleon was a great example there because he's like, if, you know, somebody who tried to control others, aka became like a warlord. I don't know if that's what you'd really call him, but I don't know. He was a warlord. He did a bunch of wars. So the author of this article continues. He says, that is why the Atomic Habits phenomenon is such a good sign. The book's millions of readers are seeking self-improvement and thus directing their energy inward. The more they do that, the less they will expend their energy on others, trying to improve others by meddling with their values through corrupting indoctrination or meddling with their behaviors through shackling legislation. They will not only meddle less, but model more. And that's one thing I just love about Ian. Like Ian, my husband, the founder of the show, he has a very strong set of moral beliefs, but all he does is model them. Like he won't ever tell even me what to do.
Like, I really like that about Ian. So I do have a really good story about Ian doing exactly just that. So about several months ago in September before Ian was put in prison, we were doing a New Hampshire independence outreach in downtown Keene, New Hampshire, and you know, we were just handing out flyers and Ian showed up and instead of telling me, oh, well, you should go out in front of the table and ask people to take a one-question survey on whether they want to leave New Hampshire. Instead, he just did it himself.
Hmm.
Someone like my dad or a parent might be like, you should do this, you should do that. And said, here, let me model this for you.
Aww. Yeah, Ian's really good at that. He's just like a go-getter. Sometimes he blows my mind because he'll be like, I'm just going to do this. And I'm like, oh, I wish I could think of a good example, but he'll be like, I'm just going to do this. And I'll be like, oh, can we do that? And he's like, I'm doing it right now. Like, that happens all the time. I'm like, whoa, I didn't even think of that. I can't think of an example, you know, but it happens all the time. And it sounds like that's like exactly a good example, actually. Like,
yeah.
I'm just going to start handing out things and talking to people.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's stuff that feels like you're going to get in trouble. And then it really blows my mind. Because it's like, yeah, you might get in trouble, but you should at least try.
If it's
something good, not something bad. So he says that these types of people will not only meddle less, but they'll model more. That is because their self-improvement efforts can inspire those in their circle of influence to self-improve in emulation. At whatever scale of influence they have, self-improvers tend to become leaders who lead by example rather than meddlesome tyrants, mini goats instead of mini Napoleons. I really hope it's goat. I feel like it's not. I feel like I've heard it said and I was surprised by how it was said. So this is not to say that conservatives and libertarians cannot influence the moral values and political ideas of others, but as Reed taught, good influence cannot be achieved through meddlesome campaigns of counter-indoctrination, culture wars, and wars of ideas. Yeah, I really hate this whole idea of like the culture war. We need to win the culture war.
Yeah. If you want to win the culture war...
I'm too anti-war for that.
I mean... If you really want to win a culture war, demonstrate why your cultural ideas are better instead of going to attack people online. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I agree. I really like that we have like this community here and we can just show people like we have good lives instead of like, you know, constantly fighting the establishment and the state. Like, it's important to do activism, but I think a huge thing that brings people here and the thing that brought me here was just seeing like, oh my God, there are people up there like not wearing masks and hanging out together. Like,
yeah, just happily living your life.
Yeah. Just like normal.
And sure. Like every community, it's going to have disagreements and people separating for whatever reason for a period of time or whatever, but you know,
and that's good.
Yeah. It can be good, but
shouldn't be forcibly together all the time. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Oh, you guys are in the group, you guys are in the church or you're out of the church.
Right, it's not a cult.
Right. Yeah, and a lot of people accuse it of being a cult, but I don't think it is. So somebody did text me that it's Gotha. So
okay.
I guess it's Gotha.
All right.
I forget his first name. Yeah, it's like something von Gotha. So he says, leadership in this arena is also a matter of self-improvement, as opposed to other improvement, of modeling over meddling. The more we concentrate on improving our own understanding, expression, and embodiment of good values and ideas, like freedom, the more that others will gravitate toward our moral and thought leadership. Self-improvement is inherently pro-virtue and pro-liberty. What our world needs is not a culture war or a war of ideas. What the world needs is for each and all to wage and win the war within. Oh, that's so nice.
It is.
It has a Alexander Solzhenitsyn. I never
said it. I don't know how to pronounce that name either.
Solzhenitsyn. That's as close as I can get. Quote, it says, the line separating good and evil passes not through states, nor between classes, nor between political parties either, but right through every human heart. And through all human hearts.
Mm, that's a beautiful thought, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really nice. Like, that's like in Naruto. Naruto becomes really powerful when he does this whole process that lets him fight an evil version of himself.
Mm-hmm.
Once he defeats the evil version of himself, he gains a whole bunch of power. And I think it's like a really good... it's just exactly what we're talking about here. Like destroying the evil in your own heart can help you to model others and influence them as opposed to controlling them.
Oh, I agree. Like the biggest battle isn't between good and evil. It's between love and fear. Like, are we choosing to love or are we choosing to live in fear? And when you're choosing to live in love, you're choosing to make your life better. When you're living in fear, you want to control others because you're afraid of what they're going to do or whatever.
Right. He also adds another quote from that guy, Leonard E. Reed. Right method consists of self-improvement. If everyone were devoted to the perfection of self, there could be no meddlers amongst us. And without meddlers, there could be no socialism. And he says, P.S., if this essay resonated with you... Oh, never mind. He's just talking about his online course. So yeah, you can go read that from Fee. Self-improvement is inherently pro-liberty. I thought that was such a beautiful short little article. And it was really inspiring to me. It reminds me of Ian, the person who founded this show, like we were bringing up. And, just,
and your
like,
husband.
Yeah, and my husband. And I think it's... It's just it's the method to take. There's been plenty of times when I was very frustrated during like the prosecution of Ian, where I'm just like, why can't people just get this stuff? So like, why can't they just all understand it so I can just go and like not have to deal with my husband being put in jail? And I was always like, just like tweeting like, you know, like this is what's right and this is what's wrong. And even though like I believe that I am right and what's right, I just feel that's just not a method that will... All it's going to do is, like, give me a headache. Seriously.
Yeah,
like,
and you're not changing anybody's minds on Twitter anyway, because... Well,
it's
just
not
read
just
your
Twitter
tweets
either.
And...
It's not just Twitter. It's, like, the method.
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
Because I'm sure people's minds have been changed on the internet. There's this whole, like, oh, it's not activism to be on social media, but, like, people do get influenced on social media.
Sure.
But it's not just, when you're trying to influence them.
Right. Like just telling people a thing, like trying to make them get it.
Mm-hmm.
I think modeling is a lot better. Like that's why on the show a lot recently I've been talking about like I just love my community and I just like love all the people around me and I wouldn't have as good of a quality of life as I do, which ultimately like minus the stake taking Ian is like a really freaking good life. I don't even have to deal with like the normies. I really don't even talk to my neighbors very much. Like my literal neighbors like around me other than the people who live on the other side of the house though.
Yeah.
Because it's just like I get everything I need from like the community of people that are here on purpose. Not just people who just like happen to be born here and they're like, I'm your neighbor. But like my chosen community.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of you guys. Or both of you guys and all of the people that we know that come to like our social Sundays and stuff. And when you're talking to them, you don't have to be like, oh, would this person call the cops on me if they got mad at me for something right now? Like you don't even have to worry about something like that.
I know. I haven't worried about that in so long. Hmm. Like someone calling the cops on me.
Yeah.
That's nice.
It is really nice.
Like living other places. You're like, oh, are my neighbors going to call the cops on me? Or
that's literally a completely valid thing to worry about.
I had a boyfriend call the cops on me once.
I've had a roommate that called the cops on me like 5 times to the point where the cops started telling her like, listen, you can't call the cops every time you have like a disagreement with your roommate.
Oh yeah, because I broke up with him and so he called the cops to try to get me arrested.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Did they arrest you?
They did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean like they'll take anything they can get. Like,
I had a warrant that I didn't know I had. So.
Well, that's actually just violence, you know, like that is sending somebody to come harass your ex who has a gun and may kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Like you should always treat cops as a dangerous thing. Yeah,
they're
person.
A weapon.
Yeah.
They're a weapon.
Using a weapon, I guess you literally. Mm-hmm. Since we have a little bit more time in this episode, I really wanted to talk about this crazy story I found on Drudge Report. It's from irishstar.com. It says, worrying figures show STD rates skyrocket among Americans who are 55 and older.
Oh, the 55
and... Why is that?
Well, I mean, what else is there to do?
Well, like, why is it just happening now?
I don't know.
I guess the 55-year and older crowd are getting around a lot.
Oh, probably because, you know, the boomers are getting older and dying off, and you got widows and widowers, and then they're...
That makes a lot of sense.
Playing the game when they've just been with Mabel their whole lives and they don't know how to actually do it right.
Oh my goodness. It says STD rates are seemingly skyrocketing among older Americans, according to the most recent figures released by the CDC. While STDs, which are sexually transmitted diseases, if you don't know, are normally associated with younger people, it seems as though it is older Americans that are contracting certain STDs based on recent stats. Adults in the U.S. over the age of 55 are contracting the likes of chlamydia, hepatitis C, and syphilis at a much higher rate than they were just 10 years ago. And I totally believe that you're right, Lori. It's probably just because their husbands are dying off. So the most recent stats are from 2022, and they show quite a significant increase in the number of adults contracting STDs compared to 2012. For example, in 2022, there were 5,160 reported cases of syphilis in adults age 55 and older, an increase from what used to be 3,092 in 2020. So in just 2 years, it went up by like 2,000.
That's crazy.
But to put that into perspective, in 2012, there were only 712 cases. Wow, now there's 5,160.
Wow, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
Could it have something to do with the vaccine? Like their immune systems are worse? Whoa, I bet that is honestly it. I hadn't even thought of it being the vaccine until just now. A bunch of people getting an experimental vaccine and wondering why they're suddenly getting infected with chlamydia more often. Says similarly, chlamydia cases among Americans age 55 and older in 2022 were reported to be 19,766 compared to 13,700 in 2020. Whoa. Speaking to NBC News, Texas A&M professor Matthew Lee Smith said that this increase could be due to a lack of sex education among the impacted generation. And that makes a lot of sense.
That would make a lot of sense.
He yes. said back in the 30s and 40s, traditional school wasn't really doing sexual education. I just thought that was interesting. And if not, it did make me think a couple reasons that it could be. 603-283-6160 if you want to put that in your phone. But we're on freetalklive.com if you want to check us out there. Thank you for listening. It's been Free Talk Live. Peace.
Peace.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.